All right, I'll start recording. Okay. Welcome to the March 11th meeting of the Pacifica Technology Task Force. My name is Jim Dingman. We'll be discussing a number of issues today. One of them will be the main issue will be the question of KPFK, the technical issues concerning what it has in terms of equipment, what would be the impact of moving it, et cetera. And I welcome everybody here today. We're going to actually start to get into the CPB issue. Probably I'll do that next week since we're doing that. I've received very extensive information from one of the general managers of one of the affiliates that basically, if followed, will give all the general managers and PDs and proper paid staff guidelines to basically get an application in on time by late May. This also requires a lot of training. People have not applied for the CPB for a while. I think there are scattered people with expertise throughout the system who did it in the past. I understand from Andrew Phillips, who used to be an engineer at KPFA, he used to do this. Maybe Tom knows who this guy is. But that's something that I definitely am committed to getting underway. There are literally about 8 to 10 hours of training videos that CPB has about how to properly fill this out. So we'll get to that. But today we're going to deal with mainly this issue technically of KPFK, what the situation is there technically, in terms of what they have and what would be the, pros and cons of if a move occurs, what would, be the negative aspects or positive aspects of that for what matter. Obviously, to be forced into this situation, and I say this only, in my own opinion as a board member, it would be, you know, this is a terrible choice that people are having to deal with right now. And anything I say in this call should not reflect about anything. There's a lawsuit underway. I'm not going to talk about that at all. But anyway, let me turn it over to Stuart. Go on, Stuart. Yeah, I can see that. I think we all can see that.
I have also put it in the chat, the whole text. This is Ziri.
All right. Thank you, Ziri. Stuart, you can scroll if you want. If you want to, this is your memo you wrote. Stuart. Stuart, are you there?
He's muted.
Muted. Yeah, just got unmuted.
Stuart, unmute your mic. Stu, you can also just push the space bar.
I'm just trying to push the space bar to talk. I got it. Well, first of all, we really haven't done any specific inventory on what we have, although what we currently have isn't what we would be able to even purchase in the future. And we'd have to do it in parallel in order to stay on the air. We'd have to purchase equipment. But first, the first consideration would be, where would we go and would that facility be suitable? We need line of sight to the transmitter to get our microwave link going. We would need permission from a landlord to put antennas on the roof to do that. We would need a building where we would have the ability to get in and out 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that isn't a given with many landlords. We would need parking, which we currently have. Parking on the street is $1 an hour, either for employees or staff or visitors. That would be a big problem. We would need security for both equipment, you know, and people, which we have to some degree. We have 10 security cameras right now and lighting outside. Currently, we have 4 studios. We have 2 editing studios. We have a newsroom with 2 editing studios. And we have 2 additional editing rooms for producers, as well as 2 conference rooms, office space, equipment room, a shop for the for engineering. And, you know, a lot of offices. And we have everything is connected by internet cables. Our printers are on the network and that sort of thing. And we are also hosting the two national servers as well as ours. So it's a big thing. I mean, there's some people that seem to think that very little of our building is being currently used, which is not true. Another factor is the archives, the PRA, which occupies a lot of space with a lot of equipment and a lot of tape storage on site, which is temperature and humidity controlled. And, that is part of an agreement since when they had their own facility and sold it, that money went towards the mortgage that paid off the KPFK mortgage in the past. So they've got a stake in this. They put money into KPFK. The agreement apparently was that in perpetuity, they would be hosted by us. And I don't know exactly what the agreement was. I wasn't around. And but that's the sort of thing we have to take into account. I also assume that we would be obligated to clear out the building. On the roof are two generators, three large satellite dishes, and a large tower. Those would have to be removed, as well as all the equipment inside the facility. This is not like moving a travel agency from one building to another. The studios are very special. They are soundproof. They're ergonomically designed. A lot of equipment is involved, and that would need to be built out. As I mentioned, I'm only a part-time employee, and I'm responsible for equipment at six different sites that we're using. So I've never built out a station. I have no idea, other than in a general way, that what it would cost and how much time it would take. We haven't even really started any sort of a planning at this end, because that would be, to some degree, based on where we're going. How much room would we have? How many studios would we have? How many could we get away with? We could start off very modestly, I guess, if we had room for expansion, at least to keep us on the air. But there's a lot of unknowns. I would defer, I think, to Mo on and cost and time involved in designing something new, because I've never done it. Admittedly, what we have is aging, because we haven't had money to do updates in my 7 years with the station. All we've been able to do is just to maintain what we've already had. And there really hasn't been any attempt to upgrade anything, because in these 7 years, we had already fallen on difficult times as far as getting in new money. And certainly the loss of CPB money was a major loss. And I hope that that can be resolved. We have our CAB locally, which was started about a year ago. And they seem to be very enthusiastic about their part of this, but I don't know what else is involved. We've been the victim of some very poor upper management over the years. Some very poor decisions were made. We're operating with a very small staff compared to what we had. We don't have a program director. Programming is our only product, and it suffers for that. Back to you, Jim.
All right. Well, why don't you scroll through your notes here, and perhaps because Michael just put in something, and just pinpoint and specifically go into each of these points you're making here.
All right. Well, is the price reasonable? I don't know. It's a big building. We are currently, we're a block from the subway terminal. We have buses, and the freeway is across the street from the station. So it's very accessible. The building is in reasonably good shape. It has had earthquake updates sometime in the past, and it hasn't suffered. We need a couple of air conditioners, some plumbing and that sort of thing, maybe a new coat of paint here and there, but it's not like the building is falling apart or is going to need a great deal of money. I'm just going through my notes here. We currently have the ability to send our primary program via our own radio link, and that's important. I mean, I would never want to give that up. The internet is not reliable enough to count on for 100% of the time. We have we also have backup, but that relies on the internet. In order to come up with something new, it's a big task. It needs somebody with the expertise to define what the station needs and what the station can afford and actually plan it out. But unless we know what the layout we would be going into is, that would be difficult. I don't know how many square feet would be required. You know, you could do this out of a bedroom, but you would just be another internet, kind of a station, and you could do it, you know, in 10,000 square feet. I think one of the important things is the currently that we have the ability to have, either a local board meeting on the premises because we have the room and the tables to do that, or we could have community, meetings in the building. I suppose we could do without that, but that would be, a problem. And once again, parking, if people had to pay $1 an hour to park, that would be very discouraging.
Yeah. Stu, can you stop the share maybe at this point?
Could I what?
Can you stop the screen share at this point?
Sure. I guess. I can figure out how to do that.
Where it says at the top of your screen, there should be a little thing that says stop share. In the Zoom screen.
Yeah, a little red
button. I see new share, but I don't. Oh, stop share. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, there it is. Okay.
Yes, right. I wanted to back up for a second, just to explain sort of what's happening. Maybe people got on late. So, we have a technology task force at KPFK that I started, several months ago, and I came in as interim, general manager, because we had some various technology issues we were facing, especially with our phone system and our internet and intranet. And then when this question came up of, the possibility of selling the building and a move, I convened a meeting to try to talk about some of the stuff that you're hearing now. What would it take if we have to move? What's involved? You know, how can we plan for that? And kind of what I got from, I make no claim to being a radio engineer whatsoever, but what I heard from Stuart and Bert, who's been very, very helpful to us in many, many things over a long period of time, from Tom and Mo and others, is that it's a, you know, very, very major undertaking, and it's, you know, there are a lot of costs and consequences to doing it. And so I reached out to, several people on the PMB to say, can we have a discussion with people who are radio engineers about what's involved and, how to go about it if it's really in the cards. I do think that, I don't think it's cost effective. As soon as I heard about it being proposed by the PMB, I did contact them to say I thought it was inadvisable that what's involved in trying to move out and find a new place is so costly, that it, you know, it's counterproductive. And, so we are making efforts to try to find someone who would, as a kind of angel, invest in the building if that's what it takes to get some cash in, but allow us to stay there, possibly even rent free. And we have some people looking at the possibility of a buy and lease back and other things. But I think that we should really spell out what some of those costs are. I do want to speak about the question of the use of the building. So there are a few unused offices because we don't have a business manager anymore. We don't have a program director. We don't have a development director. We don't have a volunteer coordinator. So all the offices that are being used for that are empty at the moment. I've recruited some individual volunteers and created some work teams around social media promotion and working on one for development. You know, we have the person, somebody who's helping, kind of as an assistant to the, interim GM, is using the former, program director's office. But the building is in use. We, you know, we're producing programs there. We're, you know, doing a lot of live programming now, locally produced. And, you know, it's not the case that it's mostly empty. Somebody, I saw somebody that said it's 25% of the building is in use. That's not correct at all whatsoever. The PRA is there. And I was hoping that Mark Torres would be on this call to talk about the impact on the PRA in particular, but hopefully he'll get on. So, you know, that's some of the context for this. And I you know, I think the people who were in a couple of the, KPFK Technology Task Force calls, you know, might want to also chime in. Tom has been, came down to LA to help us with some issues and has been coming to those meetings. Bert and, Mo has been at a couple.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll hear from them. Mo, you want to chime in here? I'll get to you later, Bert and Tom. Mo, do you want to talk about, your perspective on all this?
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. I'm still sipping coffee and nibbling, but I've looked at this, and in my experience, it's a pure economics problem in that the trade-off for the sale versus the rebuild, roughly speaking, is about 50-55%. So it's a business proposition. While it does produce a lot of cash, or would produce a lot of cash, more than 50% is going to be taken back in relocation and reconstruction. For example, I looked at property just offhand, quickly, 30-minute search around Pasadena and Altadena. I found two suitable properties with parking and access and so on. One of them was approximately $1 million. The other one's 1.6 million. Relocation, if it's going to be anything like we experienced in Houston, is 7 to 10 days, going on to 2 weeks. When you think of the imponderables that you always run into. I look at infrastructure, the roads, the transit, the telecom infrastructure, the power infrastructure. These two candidate properties that I saw had those, but now just start adding it up. So if it's one or 1.6 million, it's another this is a rough number. I haven't worked it out. I haven't worked a budget around it, but say $250,000, for relocation. Pretty soon you're close to that 50% mark. Now the use of the present use of the building, I won't go into. From what I observed, there were all sorts of variable time equations going on. I saw a lot of empty space upstairs, but on the other hand, I saw that space being used from time to time by producers and for meetings and whatnot. Sometimes there was more than one meeting going on. It's true, there are production facilities. All of that would be very, very difficult to reproduce. We're talking about a significantly smaller footprint. Initially we were talking about the bare minimum would be a 12 by 20 or a 15 by 25 room that could be subdivided. That would be the absolute bare minimum. And it would have to have, wherever we go, would have to have the ability to expand, because, presumably the station would get back on its feet. It would get healthy. Things would start happening. We would need workspace and production space for any growth. So you have to look at that. Again, I looked at those two candidate properties. They both have that. So budget-wise, I've heard some significant overestimates of what it would take to move out. The generators, Stuart, correct me if I'm wrong, are those commercial generators or are they just largest, and what's the wattage on them?
Mo, could you, both you and, Stuart explain what we're talking, you're talking about the generators on the roof, correct?
Yes.
We have
Could you guys just lay out for those people who don't know what that situation is before you answer that, Stuart?
We have two commercial generators that automatically come on if we lose local power. They are powered by natural gas, so we don't store any fuel. But the natural gas also heats the building in the winter. And it was professionally installed with panels. They self-check once a week. It's not like something you'd buy at Home Depot. They are, we had a power hit, recently, but it was a very short duration, so they didn't have time to come on. But there have been times when, you know, somebody's hit a pole locally and the power's gone down, and, we can't afford to be off the air for hours. I'm sure that the installation was done in the first class installation years ago when the station was flushed with money. I'd hate to give those away. They are, I don't know what the power capability, but they can run the whole building.
So is it fair to say 10 kW?
At least. I don't know. The data plate doesn't state what it is. I guess I could have looked at the circuit breakers on them and seen what, you know, approximately what they are, but there are two panels in our equipment room that control those guys. And Tom might have some. Tom saw them the other day. I just don't know. They're big guys, but.
Well, I'd like to correct that a little bit in that they are residential designed generators. They're not heavy commercial ones. The output of both of them, I believe they're about 35 amps each, which are in the residential category. They're fairly light. They could be taken off the top of the building, lowered over the side without the use of a crane. In relation to the tower, somebody had mentioned a $100,000 cost to take the tower down with a crane. That's not going to be necessary. The tower could be taken disassembled with a gin pole fairly easily. I think that's about all I got to contribute at this point.
Comment, Bert Weiner here.
Go on, Bert.
Okay, well, first off, the figure of $100,000 on a crane, you're talking about renting a crane, not buying it. And, you know, it would be, you know, getting the generators off over the edge of the roof. I'm concerned about the safety issues of that without using a crane. But more than that, folks, you really got to give some serious thought, just a moment. You have to give some serious thought to what you're talking about of selling the building out from underneath yourself. I've been a station owner. I've built numerous stations around Los Angeles years ago. It's been a long time. I would not want to get into doing it myself now because of all the computerized stuff and everything that goes on in studios. But I'm very familiar with the logistics of it. And I can't stress strongly enough that you need to take this building off the market before you sell it out from underneath yourself. Because at this point, you really have no plan. You've got some vague ideas, but you have no plans. You have no budget. you know, you're talking about taking down the tower. You're talking about moving the generators. And, you know, but really you don't know what you're getting into. And, Mo has been through this. Tom to some degree has been through this in broadcast. I recommend, as I'm repeating myself, you take this building off the market before it's sold and you're stuck having to sell it. You know, you talk about Altadena and, you know, Pasadena. There are parts of those areas where you do not, even though it's right below Mount Wilson, you do not have line of sight for microwave. If you don't have your own microwave system, you're taking on some rather expensive and iffy in terms of reliability link to your transmitter. But you're going to, you know, if you go, internet, you do that, you're talking about ongoing monthly costs that you have no control over and the reliability. But, you really need to rethink this. And if you can wring some money out of the building in the way of rental, you're going to cut down on space. You know, look at the possibility of reorganizing what's in the building possibly, but keeping the building. If you take on $1 million, $1.5 million in a building, consider the mortgage you're going to be paying on that and the attendant costs. If you rent a building, you're going to be at somebody's mercy, and rent won't stay the same forever or for even several years. You may get locked in 1 year rent, and then, you know, cost of living increases, and you're just burdening yourself. These are just skimming the top of the problems. I'm going to say, take this building off the market, figure out what you're going to do. Really have a plan before you sell this building, and have a plan in motion before you sell it. I've been here several times and I've seen the results of people doing these kind of things now. And it's just not a pretty thing. Go ahead, Jim.
All right. Thank you, Bert. Other comments from you, Mo?
Well, I have to agree. It is a snap roll. By that, I mean, the decision to sell was expedient. And I'll say that in public. The decision to sell might have been necessary. We can debate how necessary, but it was certainly expedient. And there was no follow through planning on what's going on. And what I've heard so far is that, well, we'll sell it and we'll figure it out later, you know, as we go along. As we said in Houston, you know, we're building the airplane and learning how to fly all at the same time. So we can't really do that, which is part of the reason why I started doing some shopping around for property. And when I say shopping for property, I don't mean a new mortgage. I mean, we're going to have to take some of those proceeds, just like we did in Houston, and actually buy a property and, you know, find some place that's suitable. It's going to be nowhere in the LA basin that we know about, not at a reasonable price. And it will be nowhere near the square footage or the utility of the building that you have now. But those are just realities. Okay, they're unavoidable realities. But I do agree that we should have a plan, and the plan is going to take time to develop with a budget and targets and benchmarks as you would do with any professional project. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you on the fact that we're not moving forward on this as professionals. It does seem a bit haphazard to me. Whether it's advised or ill-advised is another question, but going forward, we should operate like professionals and have a plan.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to refrain from comment. Other engineers who are on this phone call, Tom or Stuart, Bert, you want to come in on this at all?
Well, I'm just going to go along with what Mo was saying, that, you know, you're jumping out of the frying pan into the fire by selling this building out from underneath yourself. When, if you really stop and analyze what you have and what you owe on the building versus what you're going to acquire and what it's going to take to build up the infrastructure to run a radio station, you know, it just doesn't make any, it just doesn't make good business sense. And all you're doing is buying a disaster looking for a place to happen. If I may put it that way.
All right. I'm going to state some facts that are public knowledge to everybody here. One, we have outstanding payables that are due in 90 days over $1.4 to $1.6 million. We have long-term payables that are probably going to get excused that amount to close to $2 million. We have a loan that was taken to deal with a situation in New York several years ago. I believe that's about 2.4. They gave us a $300,000 credit, so it's maybe up to 2.6. I'm not sure what the number is. And then we have an EIDL loan from the government that is less pressing but will require payments this year. It's a 30-year loan. It's about $2 million. We have several stations, New York, Los Angeles in particular, and Houston. Houston is at least now beginning to make its nut, if you will, using the financial problem phrase. But we have no growth really in Berkeley in terms of money coming out there. They're sort of, I think they're not even paying central services right now. The only station that's paying central services is Houston and the archives. And we have the problem in New York and Los Angeles of the collapse of revenue. So those are the kind of other factors to bring into play in trying to understand this in a total picture. Anyway, again, any other engineers have comments about this issue? And one thing I'm curious about is that you, Mo, you're saying you can dismantle that, or Tom was saying you can take that transmitter on top of the building apart?
I think that's what Tom is saying, and the answer is yes.
Okay. And that's such a minor thing in the overall.
Yeah, I mean, picture. Really, it's the recovery cost is what you're really looking at.
Yeah.
How much is the gear worth that sits there? You know, there's its economic value as is. And how much is it going to cost to recover? Right. And is that a justifiable equation? It's that simple. It's a numbers question.
Well, and I believe I was throwing out some of the numbers that we're dealing with, that are, in complicating the decision making. All right. Let me bring in other people. I'll call in user one. You can unmute or you're unmuted already. Go on.
You're the person on the phone.
Yeah, this is Jonathan Markowitz in Los Angeles.
Go on.
Yes. First of all, I want to say that the Zoom meeting is not streaming over kpftx.org, even though the streaming bar is visible. I'm just wondering, is there a way to stream, or at least is there a way to archive the recording of this meeting so that people who were not able to be on the Zoom can listen to it later?
It's being recorded right now. It's being recorded right now, Jonathan.
Okay, it's not live streaming, though.
No.
I would like to point out something that I think a lot of the listeners in all five signal areas in general may actually not know about the dire situation we're in Los Angeles in regards to the KPFK building and property and what has been discussed at this meeting so far. I think that it would make much more sense if the effort to try to find very well-heeled listener sponsors, longtime supporters of Pacifica, but also to have a simulcast, long-duration fundraising pitch specifically to save KPFK's building and prevent it from the necessity of having it sold. But but also to stimulate the entire movement, you know, the progressive scene all around the country. And I think that the best way to do that would be with a simulcast, long duration fundraiser for this purpose. Anyway, that's what I wanted to raise. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Johnson. Michael, you had your hand up. You wanted to say something?
Yeah.
Hold on, let Michael go ahead.
That's okay. Let Michael go.
Michael, you're more important than I am. Go ahead.
All right. So I wanted to clarify a few things. I think one is that the situation here is quite a bit different from the situation in Houston, because in Houston, the building was unusable for a long period of time because of mold and other problems. They were mostly operating entirely remotely. The situation is different here than it was even when Mo was here a year or so ago as interim GM, because we have a lot more locally produced programming and a lot more activity in the building than we had, you know, a year or two ago, especially during the pandemic. We have a locally produced newscast that's basically being done at the station. We have a lot of programmers who use the production facilities at the station to develop their shows, even if they're not on the air live. So I think that's one factor. I think the other thing that we really need to talk about is PRA. And I'm sorry that Mark Torres, I don't think, is on the call yet. But, you know, PRA, I think about 70% of their material is stored at a separate site, but 25 or 30% is in this building. It's in a special, temperature and climate controlled room. And then there's also storage areas behind the edit bays that on the first floor, but they have a good portion of the upstairs is the PRA. And, you know, we need to take into account the cost of their move and their relocation, because what Mo is talking about is, I think, exclusively about the broadcast facility for KPFK. And that's over $1.5 million, probably, to buy a place. And that probably would not accommodate a PRA whatsoever. So,
yes, that is correct.
Yeah, so people have, there's a lot that has to be taken into account. I agree 100% that, you know, what I said on the technology task force call that we had here at KPFK after hearing from these engineers is that people are trying to take off their underwear without, you know, while their shoes, socks, and pants are still on. You know, it's the cart before the horse. So I think that it's essential that if there is going to be any kind of move, it has to be planned out, and we have to figure out what it will take for all the facilities that are located there. And again, it's, you know, as I say, even as interim general manager, I'd love to be in a situation where there was a program director and a development director and a volunteer coordinator and a business manager, and all those facilities require space and personnel. And, you know, I agree with what people are saying about the financial situation. KPFK, and this is not recent. This is over years. This is not something that happened just since the pandemic or because of the pandemic. We peaked in terms of our audience in 2008. That's a decade and a half ago. And our membership and our audience and our donor base has declined basically pretty steadily since then. There's a little bit of an uptick in the last few months. We went from a, you know, 0.1 share to a 0.2 share. We occasionally have boosted our QM. But it's going to take some time to turn that around in a much more fundamental way, and we need to do social media promotion and a lot more community engagement and a lot of other things, community events and ways to raise money off the air. So we do have, at one point I was told just from KPFK about $250,000 in agent payables, and I think it's gone up since then. And, you know, but selling off the main physical asset we have in a situation that will then generate additional costs is suicidal, I think. So I'll stop there. But, please consider, if you heard $1.5 million just for the location for KPFK, the numbers don't add up, because what the PD put out, I'm sorry, what the ED put out, as far as where the proceeds would go, they want to pay off the FJC loan. They want to, you know, make KPFA whole on the money that was seized. And then there's $1 million something to cover everything about the building, KPFK and PRA. That's not going to work. It's just, it's fundamentally, impossible. And that doesn't even speak about all the agent payables that Jim raised. I'm done. Thank you.
All right. Go on, Michael.
Yeah, thanks. Let me lower my hand here. I appreciate the conversation. I apologize for joining late, but you're going where I was going to suggest to go. Given that Michael and Mo and Stuart are on the call, and, you know, I'm not an engineer, but I play one on TV, regardless of whether a move will happen or not, has there been, does it make sense to take an inventory of the equipment that is, we'll just talk for the moment about KPFK, that is in the premises and, you know, and in between there and Mount Wilson, what would be need to be replaced if moved? What would be silly to move because it's, you know, past its useful life anyway, so that in a perfect world, if somebody drops a couple of $1 billion, you know, onto the building, what would we replace anyway because we have to? But then the second part is, how much of that stuff that we have could be moved so that from there, from a technology standpoint, not the piano and not all the offices and whatnot, how much of what is there would make sense to move versus what would have to be purchased if we move? And then, you know, things like, and again, I defer for sure to Stuart and Mo. Everybody talks about moving the STL antenna, but, you know, is that something that in this era can be replaced with a fiber link so that you don't have to find a location that has line of sight to Mount Wilson? Just to prepare for the if and hope for the things that if we had the money, we would do anyway. I mean, does such a list exist, or, you know, can, you know, I'm happy to go down and help Michael and Stuart and whomever. You know, what do we got and what do we need and what can we keep?
Comment.
Yeah, anybody want to comment on that?
Yeah, Bert here. I'd like
on,
to
Bert.
Comment. Okay. I'm not familiar with every little piece of equipment in the studio, but I've been in there. And I've seen kind of what's there. I couldn't tell you make and model numbers, but I've seen it. It's rather old equipment. It was old when it was put in. It wasn't very little of it was new. What you're talking about, what you could save in the way of expenses by moving the equipment is an insignificant amount. It just isn't, it's almost not worth it.
I suspected so.
Yeah, so, you know, you're talking about almost a new build out, and finding used equipment. I see what goes on. Used equipment is really not a good idea because it's usually pretty shot by the time you could get it used. So, as far as the STL antenna, the STL antennas, if you got a one-story building that was line of sight to Mount Wilson, you know, you could, STL antennas are a dime a dozen. They can be gotten, even used. They're fine, usually. That can be done. But when you start talking again fiber in this day and age, if I would not hang my hat on a fiber STL, plus the cost of it, the monthly cost of it is, you know, prohibitive. And you know, with as much as you're bleeding money, I would strongly advise against it, going that route. You are better off with your own RFSTL. You've got equipment now that can be moved, comparatively easily. And, you know, your reliability on it is probably much higher than what you'd get doing anything over the internet. I speak from someone who uses the internet for remote broadcasts, you know, multiple times a week and everything. And, I wouldn't trust it as far as I could throw it. It's the truth. It's the nature of the thing. It's the nature of the beast.
Hey, like I said, I'm not an engineer. I play one on TV. So thank you.
Right. I like that RCA board beat.
It's an old BC6B. That's what I grew up learning on.
I know.
Towards that end though, if it made sense to at least have a top level, what would be the bare bone? Again, if it had to be moved, what is the bare bones that would need to be purchased to set up something that would keep us going with one or two, or three, you know, a master control and two studios or whatever. NAB is next month. I'm guessing Mo is going. I met him there last year. I'm going just to sort of look around and see what are the things that are out there that could efficiently and economically do what we need to do to cover the big if.
Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
That's something we need to discuss.
Yeah.
You need to outline what is it that you need to do. You need to really give some serious thought. What do you need to accomplish? What do you need in the way of production? What are you willing to sacrifice? And, how much are you willing to cut back on stuff?
Yeah, so that's called a needs assessment. Just incidentally, it has a name. Needs assessment.
And we need to remain on the air until the switchover.
And, that's part of the needs assessment. And when I talk about timelines and benchmarks, that's also a part of project planning, which, we're familiar with. We didn't have a formal project timeline for Houston, but Sandy and I pretty well followed the protocol anyway, just to get along. And then Janine is right about budget. She's absolutely right that once you get all these other factors set down, then you start attaching numbers to it, hard numbers that you can defend, and come up with a budget. And all of that will take, 30 days, 60 days? It takes time to do those things. You just don't snap roll them out. It's part of a business plan. And the fact of the matter is we don't have one. We just don't. So, the do or don't is sort of, as Brent aptly said, is definitely the cart before the horse.
All right. Janine, you've been had your hand up for a while. Go on, Janine.
Yeah, I was just, actually I have a, odd speaker problem. Let me know if there's an issue. I put in the chat so anyone on the phone wouldn't see that. So yes, I'm a project manager, and so I come into situations where we have to get it's film and video, but we have to weigh whether to go to Oregon or whether we're going to go to Arkansas or whether we're going to go overseas. And I have to compare projects constantly. That's what I do for a living. I get paid for it. So I would love to construct something, because I see what's happening in this conversation is what would be helpful is a spreadsheet of all the costs, but variables, right? So you've got a variable, a budget that is if we keep all the original equipment and we go somewhere where we don't have line of sight. You have another variable where you keep all the equipment and you do go to somewhere, both line of sight and not line of sight. And then you say, no, we're going to do all new equipment and have those two variables. So you'll have like six different variables. So that I just think that I know it's a big numbers game, but this is, I could put it into a Google spreadsheet, get it started with Stuart, and then invite a lot of the people like Bert, who I just met, and Mo, and various things. And we can isolate what we need to get bids on. And that's, you just kind of start to eliminate the question marks. And I think I believe that, just instinctually that it's not going to make sense. But I think that also by building a building something like that, you actually have something to point to that people can absorb. And I think that's not, that's what's not happening with the PNB. It's very important to give something visually that people can absorb, that you can point to. And certainly there could be a range of price. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you can do a low end and then a high end of estimates, but I'm willing to get started on that right away. And, you know, I just, this is important because I'm writing down all the things that would be a variable. So this is a very informative, you know, gathering.
Right, if I might you. Just and, say, you know, I want to make a statement here. I am a director, and again, so far I've heard some discussion about the cost factors that I mentioned earlier, but to say that one doesn't have a quote plan end quote, I think that again, people have to confront these cost factors that are driving this very issue and not ignore them. That to me is not sound decision making. And yes, I agree that all these different options have to be laid out rationally and looked at cost factor wise, the pros and cons of them. But to say that one doesn't have a plan, I think is, frankly, not accurate. And, we're dealing with, again, these cost factors. That's why this whole situation started to even be discussed. Go on, Stuart.
Okay. I was just looking, to slightly shift. One of the possible remedies that's been discussed is signal swap, whether it occurs here or elsewhere. The national station, because it's the biggest audience in Los Angeles, would be KPCC. They have an effective radiated power from the same location that we are of 600 watts. We have 110,000 watts. Their coverage is severely restricted by that, and what they've had to do is to put in a number of translators. They are very well endowed, and they can afford these things. We would lose and never get back. Never, there's not a chance we'd ever get back the signal coverage that we have. Now, we're not using the coverage to the best extent. That's a programming issue. And, you know, we have one product, and that's programming, and we have nobody with the expertise, really, to drive the changes in programming and to work with the programmers to make it better. But to suddenly wake up one morning and come in and, see a for sale sign on the building when there's been so little discussion was pretty jarring. And, I hope it's a wake up call. And, but we need to come up with some numbers. I don't know how to do that. It's unfortunate that we went through the whole country went through a financial decline early in this century. And then the COVID thing. But even when I started 7 years ago, the parking lot was always full. There were people everywhere in the building, and that could conceivably happen again. We can't go into a small space without expansion possibilities. And, if we had opportunities, we can't say that we can't follow through the opportunities because we don't have the space or the money to put anything into that. Basically, we've not been, putting money into the technology over these past few years because we couldn't afford it. We're making do with what we have. In some cases, we no longer have certain capabilities because we just don't have the money to maintain things. One would hope that with future growth, we could accommodate that. But we need people with expertise in that. And we also do not have a full-time capable information technology person, and that's increasingly important in broadcasting. Everything is based around that. And the possibility of being able to run the station remotely to some degree, especially in the evening hours, is something that we really need. And we don't have that. Our computers are largely hand-me-down Windows 7 computers. It even drives our automation system. And these are probably 15-year-old computers that have run day and night. The probability that they're going to fail on the air is very high. And that's just a for instance. That would all have to be replaced. But any new station, any new modern station has to be based around information technology. And that's just a given. And we don't have that expertise, so we'd have to bring in a consultant. Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. Music to my ears. Beth, you were trying to get on to talk, and I think you put your hand down, Beth. Michael Novick alerted me that you were on a phone call.
Thank you, yeah.
Go on.
Just a second. Yes, Pacifica has major financial problems that have to be addressed. Sale of the KPFK property will not solve those problems, falls far short of solving those problems, and comes with problems of its own, the cost of which have not been factored in. I'm a director, too. I agree that there's effectively no plan, certainly nothing that would pass as a business plan. An issue I've raised from the first that this proposal was brought forth at the national level. I've been on the National Finance Committee now for, this will be my third year, and I moved to require a business plan and a balance sheet before we make any final decision on that. That motion died for lack of one vote. I have yet to see this move so much as penciled out anywhere. It doesn't make business sense to me to make such a major, major move, selling off a capital asset to cover the cost of past operational expenses with no plan in place as to how to rectify the fact that we can't cover our operational expenses now. Repeatedly, I hear the proceeds of that sale referred to as revenue, which it's not. So I just don't think that this has been thought out at a business level. At the same time, I have to acknowledge that the extreme financial problems that the whole network has, and I think that the lack of problem or the lack of planning extends to that level too. It's not just this predicament. The entire network needs better business management, more grounded, sensible, fully informed, well thought out business management, and I just don't see it there. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Beth. I understand Otis is on the phone call. Otis, are you here? Otis, can you unmute? Otis, if you are here, if you could put it on the stream, I'd appreciate that. I don't see you chiming in automatically. 646-725-2793.
You what? I'm sorry I was late. I completely screwed up on the time. It's on the stream now.
Thank you, Otis. All right, I thought you hadn't had your first cup of coffee or something. All right, 646-725-2792, you're up.
Good afternoon, can you hear me?
Yes, go on please, thank you.
Hey Jim, it's Shaw, how are you?
Good morning, how are you?
Irritated, but we're good. I thank you for having this meeting because, you know, we have discussed this before, that we don't have a plan. I will give you a small example. I live in an area where we don't have firehouses. Every year we have to raise enough money to have firehouses. So the state gives us $80,000. Each firehouse has two trucks. In short, we have to raise about $500,000 every year to pay for our volunteer force because no one is paid. Give them a stipend, but no one is paid. I haven't heard you all speaking on how are we going to ask each station to step up to the bar and move forward? So as it's been said before, so I'm not going to repeat it, the sale will not take care of this. Now, I'm a reformed BM, SE. That's what I got my first baccalaureate in. There is no plan. So therefore, what are we going to do? What are we, changing the grid is nice, but the changing the grid, we are an outreach organization. That's how I came to WBAI. I saw it at some park or another, and I looked at the table and I spoke to people. That's what I have to do every year as being a member of the Volunteer Fire Association. Although we have well-heeled communities who want to pay for the fire, but they don't want to give up volunteers. This is an outreach issue. And each station has to come to the table and say, how are they going to outreach to not get new listeners? Because people don't listen that way anymore, but to get new members. What are we doing to make sure that we are going to be able to increase membership? Membership. We can work with local small businesses. I was able to reach out to 100 businesses, actually 105. I just got off the phone a few minutes ago with a business that's in New Jersey who was willing to help out with IT issues. That's what they do, who is willing to sponsor people. But they don't want to sponsor things with people they don't trust. So what are we going to do? If we have a plan, we could actually point to the plan. And that's what we actually do when we're fundraising. Because we have to raise for each hot firehouse $500,000 because we're so spread out. We only have 30,000 people we need to raise all these monies from. And we do it. But you have to really reach out to people. If we had a plan to say, this is what we need, this is what you, the members, reach out to your people and explain to them how it can be done. There are thousands of organizations, and I did look up in California, in Texas, in New York. There are 100,000 different organizations that are doing things on the so-called left, but that are community-oriented. Have we reached out to them and said, we need your help. We need you to come on board and to work with us. When is all of those things going to happen, and are those things going to be in the plan?
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Shaw. Daryl, you have to unmute, Daryl. Mr. McPherson, Mr. Goodchurch.
There we go. We got
the Goodchurch. Okay.
Okay, Daryl McPherson, listener and dedicated person to WBAI until I can find something else to do. Okay. And it's really hard following Doc Shaw. So, what is the where is the technology of communication going? What is our market? With regard to your youth, are we bringing them in? What is the wealth of the listenership currently? I'm looking on the folks through the call, and I dare say that if anybody's under 50 here, we're doing really well. Since Jim tagged me as Goodchurch, I'd like to introduce the platform. It's actually Goodshop. And I did the math, Jim. The loans that you talked about came to about $10 million, right? 1-6-2-2-6-2. So 10.
Something like that. Close to $8 million. $8 million.
Well, let's be generous because we have other things that we need to address. Like, KPFK is appalled at their staffing. I'm trying to figure out how BAI is even on the air. So one billion searches, just the penny a search takes care of your $10 million loan. I'm just giving this as an example of what is possible. Are we reaching out to those who have capital who are looking for tax deferments? Right? 100 billionaires live in New York City. Do you think we could find one who would be willing to take BAI on as a tax?
You muted yourself.
You got so excited, Daryl, you hit the mute button, man. Daryl, you got on mute. Or else I'm going to tell you to Google. Go on, man.
Well, anyway, the point being, I'd like everybody to go to goodshop.com/about. Read about Good Shop. Percentage of your shopping goes to the cause of your choice. However, more important than that, without zero out of pocket, you use the good search engine powered by Yahoo. Why do you want to do that? Because the amount that the listener understands about the debt of Pacifica, because I think we need to think of the foundation rather than the individual stations. Every day we need to talk about how much the foundation needs to maintain its archive, which is irreplaceable, and maintain at least the five stations that it currently operates. Because my understanding is all those decisions come out of the foundation. And if one station fails, then the whole foundation is inoperative. So to sum it up, to get the money, we need to talk to the people who have the money. The people who fail to have the money, we need to organize them to do searching, a penny a search, to save the information, the communication vehicle that they have that will give them information to get them out of the state that they're currently in and move them into a state where we all agape one another and we have health and wealth, housing and love. Peace.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Daryl. And obviously, to even be sitting here talking about this is absurd. We should be figuring out how to spend money to renovate the damn building, not sitting there talking about whether it should be sold or not. All right. Go on, Zuri.
Thank you, Jim. So thanks everybody for being here. Just the fact that we're having this meeting now that, you know, like over a month after this building was put on the market is exactly what's wrong right now with this situation. This needs to happen before. And there were a few people here from Doc Sean to Daryl who said this as much. So I believe that it's exactly right. We need to first, the PMB, the ED, and all these entities need to first focus on fundraising as we do here. I also introduced Michael last week to some people from Merrill Lynch who are very doing creative financing. They are interested in telling people exactly what you said earlier, Daryl, about they can save 40% of their taxes if they do, you know, donation to charities or to nonprofits like us. And so there, it has to be a big effort to finance this transitional bridge. And the transitional bridge, what I mean with it is while we're changing our programming, if there is 40% dead wood where there's almost no money coming in, I know we cannot only assess the value of a program on the basis of how much it brings in, but it has to be at least some idea of how many people are listening to each program to make some changes. I feel we have not made changes. I can speak only for KPFK. I don't know the others so much. For getting more youth programming in, getting new music in, more hip stuff. You know, I think one of the youngest on the LSB at KPFK. This is ridiculous. You know, I should be one of the older ones. And so it is very important to get new audiences and exactly also how was said before, outreach. Outreach to organizations and individuals in both these cities, New York and LA. There's so many leftist rich people, they never heard of us. They have no idea who we are. We need to do some outreach and rebranding of KPFK, and especially we need to stop whining about how much we are in the toilet. Honestly, I'm sorry to say, this meeting I arranged with Merrill Lynch, with Michael Novick there, and our ED, Stephanie Wells. Stephanie spent half her time complaining about how bad we're doing, basically demotivating these people to get on board. So this needs to stop. We gotta realize that we actually have to grow. I believe that we have to not only do multi-platform stuff, meaning get video involved, get all the social media involved, but possibly starting a very small outfit in Chicago, because otherwise this area is going to go the way of the South as it did in the 60s and 70s. And so I think there's very important political considerations why we have to hold on to these stations, all of them, and actually grow and why we have to hold on to the signals. We cannot afford politically to give any room. With all the chaos that's coming down the pipeline politically, we will be in a prime position to be a real beacon of hope for people on the left in this country. And so that's why I say we need to focus on fundraising, and programming reinvention and multi-platform. And yes, we're in a dire situation. We're going to just have to scratch by a little bit more. But please don't sell this building. It really makes no sense. Thank you.
All right. And just to add to that, I agree with you 100%, Ziri. Several years ago in New York, a Goldman Sachs executive had been listening to WBAI on Martin Luther King Day, got so excited he called the station up and wanted to donate his bonus of several hundred thousand dollars to Pacifica. And a whole bunch of idiots, and I'll say that openly on this phone call, prevented that from happening. And that stuff has to stop. Okay, yeah. That has to stop. That was complete idiocy. Anyway, now that I made my objective comment. Okay, Andrew, go on.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. It's my personal comments. I appreciate the comments of Ziri Rideau and other similar comments. I think it's unfortunate this has been stated more than one time, at least. It's unfortunate this discussion, which seems very productive, has not happened sooner and is happening after the fact, after the building has already been put up for sale. And some of us, or I should say speaking for myself, one wonders why the PNB has taken this approach of not being more transparent, more open, and involving the memberships and other staff members, particularly the staff members at KPFK, who would be affected most by this, such as Stuart Landau and all the other staff folks, why they haven't been involved more. And, but I guess the good thing is putting the building up for sale has generated this much interest and now it's happening. So I guess there is a bright side to this. But I would like to urge the PNB to, change their approach here and start opening it up more. This is great discussion. And I am wondering, what is else, since we do need some solutions, obviously, what solutions are being considered other than selling the building, if any are? Thank you.
Go on, Tom.
Yeah, it's apparent to me that we need to put together some kind of a planning committee here to try to go forward. First of all, we need to try to talk the PNB out of selling the building. Then we need to come up with a plausible budget. Then we need to figure out how we're going to find the funds to do that budget. So I don't know. Can we put together a group of people that will go forward, try to move everything forward here is my question at this point.
All right. Thank you. Michael.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not on the PNB. I did push to try to have this meeting happen. And then Jim had the technology task force, I guess, already scheduled. And we said, let's use it for this purpose. And I'm glad that we are. And I think that the PNB as a whole needs to put this on their agenda. And, you know, it's very unfortunate that I think there are only two directors on this call. You know, I think we need to work on that. I'm, you know, we can have an additional technology task force meeting very shortly at KPFK, and I'm happy to involve Michael and Janine and others in that to, you know, start talking about, you know, dollars and cents of what's involved. I think there are, you know, a number of things, we talked about, and we've been trying at KPFK, and Ziri came up with a couple of people. You know, a number of our staffers and programmers have come up with people that I've been talking to and they've been talking to, and we have not yet found someone, but we have been talking to individuals who have a substantial amount of money. Somebody talked to a woman who gave the ACLU of Southern California the building they're in. Currently, she's not in a position to help us. The moment her husband just died, the whole estate is being revised. You know, we talked to a couple of left-leaning millionaires that Matt Cedillo, who's one of my new programmers, knows, and that didn't pan out. So we are trying to do what people are talking about. I do think that one solution, as I said, is I use the term angel investment. Apparently that's inaccurate on the Wikipedia definition of angel investment. What I'm saying is finding somebody who would buy the building for us, from us, and let us stay in it for the period of time necessary to do the kind of full-scale planning that's needed. I think that, you know, the PRA is an incredibly invaluable asset that we are not monetizing and need to. And, you know, I proposed, and I think they've included it in their plans, but it's never materialized. One of the things that the PRA can and should be doing is identifying academics and secondary teachers who can develop course outlines based around material in the PRA, and those can be merchandised to school districts, to colleges and universities, and be an income stream for the foundation. I think that's vital. I think that we do have to do some of the things people are talking about of identifying local small businesses. The PNB has adopted a policy on underwriting, and we're starting to do a little bit more of it at KPFK, mostly in terms of cultural institutions and performance venues and some other nonprofits. And we have to, you know, generate income, you know, that will help us rebuild our audiences and do some of the stuff that Aziri is talking about. We do need to be on all these other platforms. The, you know, one of the things that people haven't talked about here at all is I think only about 30% of people under 30 even have a radio at this point. And so we have to be, you know, I mean, I think there are reasons why they should have radios, because you can't be tracked when you're listening on the radio. Nobody's collecting your data when you're listening on the radio, but the fact is that they're on their devices instead. So the Pacifica National dropped the Pacifica app. I unbelievably unwise decision. It requires some little amount of money to keep the provider that hosts the app. And so there's no longer an app. You can't get Pacifica or any of the stations, as far as I know, on your phone. That's absurd. You know, it's moving backward. So those are concrete, specific things that we have to do immediately. And, you know, I agree we need to refresh more of the grid. It doesn't, you can't snap your fingers and do it overnight. So, I do think that, you know, the requirement for a plan is right in front of us. And I think that plan has to incorporate the PRA and, on all aspects of both what it would cost to move and how they can increase the revenue for the foundation. I think it has to, you know, KPFT, I was on the PNB a number of years ago for a year. And at that time, KPFT approached the foundation to say, we need a new transmitter. They had been operating with waivers from the FCC for 3 or 4 years to operate at much lower power than they were licensed for. And, it was, you know, at risk of losing the license. And so the Pacifica Foundation came up with $100,000 for KPFT to buy, you know, the necessary transmitter equipment so they could operate at full power again. And I think that's how they were able to do the HD also. But at that time, you know, on the PNB, I insisted that we had to get a plan from them about how they were going to repay that and rebuild their audience. And I don't think it ever materialized. And the reason they're, you know, relatively solvent is that they're operating, I think, with 2 paid staff, which means they couldn't even qualify for a CPB grant, even if Pacifica, you know, reestablished its relationship with the CPB. So, you know, we're not in that position. Again, that's the difference between KPFT and here in terms of the building, a lot of other things. We do have some paid staff and, you know, they're doing important work, vital work that, you know, is actually bringing in revenue. That it's the membership staff. It's the, you know, limited production staff. It's the, you know, people who are doing some of this, development of, cultural affairs underwriting. So, I just think the next steps from here are, we will convene something at KPFK. I will. And, we're going to pursue further this question of some kind of angel investor, in the sense somebody who would put the money up for a tax write-off or whatever other purpose and eventually would own the building and be able to sell it if we can go through what it takes that we've outlined here to do it in such a way that it does not, it actually increases our capacity to do, you know, to impact the discourse in Southern California and not to eliminate it. And, I think the PNB, you know, has the obligation to schedule a meeting, in which the main topic on the agenda is this question and to come up with a plan and, you know, to come up with a budget and to come up with directives to the management, including myself, about how to proceed with this in a way that actually would be successful. Thank you.
All right. I'll comment on that at the end of the stack. Janine, you had your hand up.
ID followed by.
Oh, Janine, are you there?
No, I was getting on with my phone because I need to start driving. Yeah, I was just really, even in the next week, I'd be willing to, you know, whatever, Michael will schedule it, but, I, you know, for the purpose of at least just showing what the numbers might come to, I would like to have him convene a meeting with the people that I put in the chat, you know, the core technical people to at least give us an idea of what we have to price out.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Call in user one. Calling user one, you need to unmute, star six.
Go ahead, this John. Is Jonathan Markowitz again. I just to take off on something that Michael brought up here is the issue of, I wanted to reiterate the criticality. I actually believe that New York's, Washington's, and possibly Houston's audience, and maybe even a large portion of KPFA's audience, may actually not be aware of the situation that Pacifica is in regards to putting up the KPFK building for sale. I'm just speculating on that. I believe I'm right. KPFK is the only audience that is being informed about the situation, primarily by Ziri during the news broadcast, and Michael, I think, has brought it up during Report to the Listener. So in regards to reaching the progressive family of Pacifica and extending it through the entire, you know, so-called left progressive scene as it stands here, we really do have to use the signal that actually is already existing in all five signal areas. But of course we have this main contingent up in KPFA that's dedicated to, you know, only protecting KPFA essentially, and they're happy with KPFK's building being sold. So again, the other issue is that I wanted to point out that live simulcasting over social media of all five signals, either through a specific portal for that, you know, as you were just saying, maybe through an app, right? In other words, we still need to have live broadcasting 24/7 for emergencies. I don't mean just for catastrophic emergencies. I'm talking about political reports that come in real time. In other words, most people do listen to podcasting on demand. So that's part of the reason why most younger people are not listening to radio anymore, and they don't have a radio. And most of the cars, new cars, don't even have radios, apparently. That's what I've heard. So the point I'm making is that we still need live broadcasting. And Michael's comment about, you know, legacy broadcasting, analog broadcasting, not being traceable, it's not a surveillance mechanism, is extremely important. However, if people are only listening to live broadcasting over their devices, it's being monitored anyway. But I still think we need to maintain these real analog signals. And, you know, Beth has been obviously trying to make that happen in regards to the FEMA grant to back up the transformers. To have power up at the transmitter sites, et cetera, and everything else, and the uplinks. The other issue I just wanted to bring up that that it's not being factored. I don't think it's being accurately factored in regards to selling the building and moving KPFK's operations elsewhere is the fact that if you are going to interface with all of these different social medias, you know, that all has to be done in a very systematic way in terms of reestablishing the studios at the new locations. I mean, it's without a doubt, it's boneheaded to sell KPFK's building in every way. So I think the other idea I had, I'm sorry I'm taking so long, in regards to well-heeled you know, very wealthy long-term sustainers in all five single areas, but especially KPFK, I'm suggesting that maybe what has to happen is to set up a Pacifica supporters trust. So, in other words, you have more financially endowed long listeners who hear of the plight of Pacifica who want to join in this process. Let's just say there is a way to put together enough money to buy the building, but have it owned in a special trust that is for this purpose, for maintaining the continuation of KPFK's building and as a mechanism with which well-heeled financial donors in all five signal areas, not just in Los Angeles and not just in Berkeley, for example, to be able to set up a trust, a fund, in other words, specifically, and I'm talking about separately of Pacifica's own trust or its own foundational accounts in regards to how it's dealt with in terms of the IRS, et cetera, and law. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan. 832-968-1438. Go on. You have to unmute. 832-968-1438. Are you there? You have to unmute. Going once. Going twice.
You can speak.
Yeah, go on. You can speak. All right, hold on, 832. Just let me go to the next person. I'll bring you back on there. 248-909-2384.
That's Beth.
Beth. Go on, Beth.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to address the issue of finances again. All Pacifica real estate was used as collateral for the FJC loan. And so if we miss payment on that loan, that's what's at risk, not just the KPFK building, but all the real estate. The interest payments on that loan are due quarterly. If we miss that payment again, we could lose all the real estate with nothing to show for it. We've made great sacrifices along the way since taking out that loan to keep up with those payments regularly right up through last September. In December, for the first time, we fell short. Only the grace extended to us by FJC allowed us that lapse and the chance to catch up without losing everything. We did that. We managed to catch up. With higher interest rates, this problem isn't going to go away. It's only going to get worse. The next payment is due this month. So raising funds someday, maybe, somehow, just isn't going to cut it. If we don't come up with sufficient funds now, we're going to be out of luck. That's at least as much as I dare say outside of executive session, but it seemed necessary to provide this reality check for people. This isn't some theoretical problem. This is immediate pressure, real pressure, with potentially everything at stake. So this is our one chance. This is our last chance to solve this problem somehow. Anybody with new ideas, please contact me or Michael, the ED, or Julie, I guess, we really need a solution here. For the record, I have voted against the sale of this building every time it's come up for a vote, despite whatever else you may hear out there from whatever source. That's my record, and I'll stand on it. I oppose the sale. I don't know how else to solve this problem right now, but it's real. It's dire. This is our last chance to before losing this asset. Thank you.
All right. All right, before I bring Janine in, people know my feelings about this. I've been clear about this for 20 years. We have to have programming that attracts enough people in each station area. So we're not fighting over a 0.1 or 0.2% market share. In the case of, PFW, I think it's 0.6, 0.8, Berkeley 3.4 to 4.4. We have to have a 500,000 people listening a week. Okay, that's it, simple. We wouldn't be having these problems if that was the case. Remember, KPCC bought a $27 million building. I know it's a different situation completely, but that is, to me, the fundamental problem, the fact that we don't have enough listeners. Secondly, the board has been working on a strategic plan. We've been dealing with it for a number of reasons, because it has to do candidly with personnel issues when we're discussing it. So it hasn't been talked about openly. We've been talking about this for 3 months now. And it will start to get rolled out. But it is controversial because given the kind of situation we're dealing with right now with, the kind of issues that Beth is talking about, which we have basically been bombarded with every day, every week when we come to meetings, ever since I started to deal with the board last year. And recall, we had to deal with, in the beginning of that period of time, essentially individuals in the system who were deciding to try to have the FCC take away the signal of one of the most valuable station in the system. So, yes, I agree with you, Michael. Strategic plan will be developed, but at this point, we've been doing this on the QT, and we're going to start getting into open discussion about it. We just have to see that that's the way to get out of this mess in part, and there has to be a lot of moving parts working at the same time. People have to take seriously, those of us who bring up the issue all the time, there's no reason why shows that have been on the air for 20 years or 30 years have to stay on. And have to be on, and essentially, why are they on if they're not contributing to the overall cost factors of the station? I mean, we get into all sorts of debates about this, but we have to start figuring out how to get beyond this problem because we have a greater responsibility to the people of this country and the world, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, because we are stewards of one of the most remarkable broadcasting institution in the country. And I think that, you know, I'm tired of having these arguments because I have a pretty sharp tongue. I have to restrain myself all the time about this. But I am sick and tired of having to be dealing in a negative way with, the situation that we're in. I think we can turn it around if we're all cooperating together. Okay. That's to me the solution to this. We have a lot of differences, but I think we're all committed to making sure that all the stations thrive and grow. And you know, that to me is the ultimate thing. And we're not sitting there. We're running a broadcasting institution. We're a broadcasting institution. If people don't like what they hear, an earlier comment was made about the young people. New York only has 2 to 3% of its listeners. And I look at the metrics of the system pretty carefully. Only 2 to 3% of the listeners in New York are Generation Z. I would imagine that could be probably the case in all the other stations. So until that changes, frankly, I personally think we should turn over the control of programming to Generation Z and Generation Alpha, you know, and start really talking about doing something completely different. But, you know, to be sitting there and having these arguments this late state and having to actually be talking about, we should be talking about renovating the goddamn building instead of selling it. It's ridiculous. All right. Anyway, Janine. Janine,
thanks. I just wanted to mention what I've, you know, I'd,
I mean, this is a technology gathering, but it seems like we've kind of moved into, you know, what the options are other than, you know, all the specifics to moving the station, which I guess is good. But, you know, as somebody that's been listening to a lot of the PNB meetings, it's so frustrating. I know that you need to have closed sessions if you're talking about personnel, but you know, what I find a lot in these meetings is that, the directors just rattle off these figures. You know, well, we have this loan, we have that loan, we have payments due at this point, and we really don't have, I've asked for it at the national level, and I was part of the audit committee. I've been part of the finance committee at KPFK for almost 4 years. I, you know, was voted in as treasurer back in December, and I'm not being recognized as it. And I don't want to get into the politics of that, but you know, there's a real need to have a balance sheet that you can show the listener members. And a balance sheet meaning what do we owe? And what assets do we actually have and what is their worth? Just like a household budget. And so I want to urge the directors on this call to not ignore this because it's really difficult to listen to numbers just being thrown out. It's the same thing we're talking about with the budget. It's if it should be on a piece of paper that can be distributed so that everybody can see what you're talking about and know that it's complete. So anyway, this is not really on point, but it does, it does kind of fold into this overall discussion where it's all verbal and, it really shouldn't be, because this is what gives, gives a lot of, a lack of trust, in how the transparency again. So anyway, I know that we have the directors on and I just wanted to make an appeal for that, on this call that I've also done in writing several times. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I'm sure that both Elizabeth and myself would be totally amenable to sharing what we can in an open session about those financial factors, so there's no ambiguity. Anyway, is that you, Doc Shaw? Next person?
Yes.
Go on.
You hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, thank you. There are a number of what we call creative financing. I know I put this out to people. It's something called self-directed IRAs. Anyone can start one. Anyone can put money in one. Anyone can take money out of an IRA and put into this. There are a number of things that can be done because with that, we, the members, can purchase the building. And it's under a particular type of rubric, but it can be done. And it can be done rather quickly, but you have to move. My biggest issue with all the stations is people can't move and you don't move quickly. And it's really rather funny that you would say this, Jim, because I think you're right. Much of the station should be run by a different generation. We won't discuss the fact that Generation X has always been tossed out the window along with the millennials. It does need new and more invigorated and invigorating leadership. But a self-directed IRA, please, people, look it up. You can take money from one place and put it in another place. We can create the fund, but the transparency will have to be key because no one's going to allow their money to just go fritter away down the drain. But we can give some air by putting those monies into these self-directed for Pacifica to not pay for a year down the road, and then to begin to pay dividends, however we want to structure it, and it can take large numbers. Those things are available to us right now, reaching out to people and letting them know this is where we are, but this is what we're moving to. You have to have something in writing so people can look at it and see it. As I said, we are not a wealthy community where I'm staying right now. There are a lot of wealthy people, but the community itself is not wealthy. There's only 30,000 of us, and we have to raise for 3 firehouses every year. We do it.
All right. Thank you.
We can do this.
All right. Thank you. Also, I want to remember we're here to talk about technology. Obviously, we're going to drift here. I figure we'll end the meeting at 3. And of course technology is integrated to everything else we're talking about. And I guess one thing that comes out of this is, okay, well, I don't even know what the inventory of equipment in there is. No idea. But go on, Zuri. Zuri, you're still muted.
Sorry. Okay. I wanted to address what Beth said before, this close to $70,000 FGC loan. Actually, this is rolled into that line of credit. So that's what I understood from the ED. She told me that this is basically being paid for and we shouldn't worry about this one. So the other thing is for example, I am in this station probably more than almost all of you, almost every day doing the news there at KPFK. I bought a printer myself. You know, we're using our own equipment. All of my team that comes in, we're by now almost 25 volunteers. Everybody has their laptop they bring in. We are all willing, you know, to put our own equipment there and use it. So this is not even the issue, this kind of stuff that we have to update all the computers or stuff like this. It's really to provide a hub, a space. So it's impossible to discuss the technology aspect of this building from what it actually means to the station, a place to meet, a place to talk, like a gathering place. And this was already destroyed in the last 3 years of COVID because there was a total hard lockdown. So finally, we can get back in this building. This is only since a few months. So don't judge KPFK by saying, oh, there's only 20% of the building used. I would say it's at least 60 and there's coming more people in. So I feel it's not easy to just separate the discussion over the technology. And then one more time about the younger generation, you know. So in the moment, there are also in all the key positions in what I can see are people of a very advanced age that keep these younger people out. The younger people that have come in that wanted to volunteer, they have left after a week or two frustrated and say, we can't deal with this because they are giving us such attitude and telling us the whole time what to do in a way it's unacceptable. You know, so I think this needs to also be accepted that just like a few other people here said before, the older generation has to allow the younger generation to come in and also make a few changes because, you know, the as it is right now, it's almost impossible. So I heard of 3 volunteers who have left solely because of Megan LePeak at KPFK. I'm just going to say that name now because, you know, this is an issue. And so, yeah, I feel it's important to include in this conversation about the tech also the value of the building for the community and for us as the producing community, which is not really monetizable. You know, you can't put a value to that. Thank you.
Yeah. Go on, Nancy. Nancy, you have to unmute.
Did you say Nancy?
I did indeed.
Okay. I don't know how much. And I, when I'm on the phone, I can't be heard. So now I'm on the Zoom video. I wanted to say something in support of a new funding coming through PRA. I have already said this before on a technology meeting, I guess last year, but that video and then adding captions in foreign languages. I mean, I lived English, but not textbook English. I mean, real, live, important, pertinent English. And if they could see it written in their language, that's so much better. Foreign students in foreign countries. I lived near a university in Japan that was foreign language university, and I met students from all over the world, and they have to know English. They have to study whether they're or whatever language there's their major study, and whatever country they're from, they have to learn English in their own countries. So English is still important. We're still, you know, we still have the best language spreads education and information. So if we had And we had, that would take a lot of volunteers, and that would bring in more volunteers. And then we could give credits to those people who are translating as translators. And we could add visuals to it, to whatever is being shown. If it's Jimi Hendrix, show pictures of him, and thank the people who let us have those pictures. If it's Martin Luther King, get pictures, and have some visuals. And people will pay money for those things. Universities will pay money for that. And we'll have more international, membership. We'll be more of a, we'll have a spot time to, I have not made time to talk.
You dropped out, Nancy.
Mr. Torres about that. But it would need a lot of volunteers to do it. The other thing I want to say is the biggest problem that I have seen since I've been volunteering at KPFT that I started in 2009 in the fall, is the lack of financial transparency. Oh, no? Yes?
All better. Go on. Hey, you're dropping out. You keep on dropping out. You dropped out totally. Yeah, go on, Nancy.
Can you hear me now?
Go on. Yeah, now you're okay.
Okay, the biggest problem is lack of financial transparency. At KPFT, we never knew how much we were supposed to have. In other words, we have a fundraiser. How much are we supposed to have at the end of the night? Or any fundraiser or even just plain old, you know, donations. We never see the individual donations. I mean, we're beginning to see them now, but it should be where every member can see all other members' donations, not with their name, but with maybe the membership number. So there's real financial transparency and every single bill, every single expense. So all P&Ls are completely itemized and transparent. Then we'll have evidence whether some stealing is going on or some stealing is not going on. But the way we have it now in this system, we don't have any evidence, so we don't know anything.
All right.
That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Go on, Daryl. Daryl, you need to unmute Daryl. Daryl.
Phone malfunction.
Okay,
I actually, Jim, can I put my hand down and come back again?
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. All right. Well, I wanted to sort of wrap up the meeting because, I guess, so where are we at with all this? We've been talking about the technical issues, the focus really part. I know we drifted off into other things, but they're important. Our focus was to talk about the technical questions at KPFK and the problem of the move. And how that would affect the signal. And, I guess, Michael, you all are still continuing your work on this. I saw the memo that, Stu offered on this. Where are we at on all this? I just want to get your suggestions.
Well, I'll do a follow up on this. I do think that the PNB needs to schedule an agendized and public discussion of this, at a PNB meeting soon, and we'll prepare some material for that, along the lines of some of the things we've been talking about here in terms of an inventory and other stuff. And, I am trying to put together a development group at the station. The same way we did the technology task force, get some volunteers and some staff members and some board members and talk about some of the fundraising aspects.
All right. And just to answer your question earlier about the bond, in the chat, Michael brought up the question of the bond. There was a discussion over the past 2 years to have a privately financed bond to help us get through this situation. The problem that occurred was when it was researched, it was discovered in the state of California, you needed 2,000 people in the state of California who had, income levels very high, I think it was in almost in the hundreds of thousands, if not million range. And that would be the group that you would mark here. That'd be the group you'd actually use for financing or issuing that bond. So that's sort of got caught off into not being followed up on. Chris Corey is the person on the national board who is following that, and he still is the one who knows the most about that. Maybe I could bring him in on a phone conversation at some point in an open session, and he could get into that in greater detail. Because whatever happens, whatever's going to happen in a situation here, we're going to have to change everything around anyway. All these ideas are very important. 92384, go on.
I think that's
you, Beth.
Okay. Yeah, this is Beth again. I've raised the issue of insufficient financial reporting at both, at the National Finance Committee, the PNB, and management meetings throughout last year. Over many months, I agree that it's a problem. We lost NEDA last September because we could see months ahead of that we weren't going to be able to afford them, and they had that timed pretty much perfectly. We lost access to our own financial records because of our own internal tech incompatibilities with Great Plains. It took us months to work that out. I'm told that those problems were supposedly solved by December, so we have yet to start to receive regular monthly financial reports. I can say with solid knowledge that the PNB, the NFC, don't have any more financial reports than have already been released to the public. Those are, as soon as they're reviewed by the NFC, they're released to local stations. So it's not like we have things we're holding back. They're just flat out lacking. I asked last month at least for the current aged payables and was told that figure wasn't available. And when I asked when it could be available, I was told it wouldn't be 4 weeks. Again, that's a problem. That's why my demand stands for a business plan and a balance sheet before we're asked to part ways with any capital asset. We need a plan. There's no plan. There's never been any statement of the objective. They say we need money. How much money? What's the actual goal? It seems apparent at this point that sale of the building isn't going to cover even existing debt, let alone the move needed for KPFK or any of the other aspirations they have for this money. I think any talks I am hearing these days about turning over a new leaf and a fresh start and all of that, it comes across to me as just happy talk and really sincerely rubbing salt in very, very open wounds.
All right. Thanks. I see we got Mark.
If there were more time, there'd be more to say.
All right. No, we're going to change the time up. Mark Torres, welcome.
Thanks. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah. Mark, I want you, since we were going to end, but now that you're here, thank you for coming. I'd like you to feel free to talk as much as you want about, it's very rare to hear your point of view about this. The archives in general, how you feel about, you know, the technical issues affecting the archives. I'd like to know, what options you see in terms of, the archives in the near future, but you have full reign to explicate as long as you want, man. Okay. Go on.
Okay. I'm going to try and be as brief as I can, but, let me just say, the point that I just heard talking about long-term and short-term finances, getting some, day-to-day financial records is all well and good, but, from what I understand in my conversation with, Stephanie Wells, the executive director, there's two major financial problems right now. One is the looming loans that we have, and the other is being able to make payroll for all five stations and meet all of the financial demands of running each radio station. So from what I understood, if we sold the building at close to $5 million, There would be $1.7 million left over after paying off existing debt, and that would be $1.7 million to somehow get KPFK up on the air and the Pacifica Radio Archive secure. Let me just give everybody a little bit of institutional knowledge, because I don't know how long people have been associated with Pacifica, but I feel that people do not understand some of our financial and real estate maneuvers in the past that have affected us today. And I'll just start with the sale of the Pacifica Radio Archives building. Many people don't know that we had our own 10,000 square foot building on Venice Boulevard that I visited on several occasions, because a colleague of mine from UCLA used to do production work there, and I would visit him there. And this 10,000 square foot building had enough room for the 70,000 tape collection of Pacifica. And we rented out half of the space to a roofing company. So it was actually generating revenue from a renter and not costing us any money in any kind of rental fees or any kind of mortgage payments. That building was sold somewhere around 88, 89, just before I started working at the archives, which was 1990. And the sale of that building resulted in paying off the mortgage of KPFK and some other financial problems that we had. So, well, people may say, the sale of buildings, we can survive these things. Well, let me just give you a little recap. We've been paying $2,500 a month for the last 30 plus years to house 50,000 of our 70,000 tapes at offsite rental facilities. So over 30 years, that's over $1 million that it has cost the archives budget to house our tapes when we had a perfect house for them, 30 years ago. So the sale of buildings has repercussions that echo way into the future. They have long-term effects. So my personal opinion about this, let me just give you another little recap of what the Pacifica Radio Archives have done since I have become director in 2015. And, I've been here for 30 years, so we've added to the revenue stream of Pacifica far beyond this. But since I'm director, we have raised over $4 million for Pacifica using our Voices That Change the World jump drive alone. So that is that the Pacifica Radio Archives is a really valuable asset that cannot be thought of lightly. And what the Pacifica Radio Archives does right, or how we function in the KPF Guild building right now, is we have 20,000 of our core collection in a humidity and temperature controlled room. We have a $20,000 air conditioning unit that keeps the tape safe. We have three servers that hold 20 terabytes of data of 20,000 tapes that we have digitized, and we have 50,000 to go. We have lots of digitizing equipment, including six reel-to-reel machines that transfer these tapes. Two of them are Swiss-made Studer reel-to-reel machines that are the industry standard for transferring archival tapes that are very fragile and over 50 years old, like many of our tapes are. And my staff of four has managed to digitize 20,000, and we have plans to digitizing the rest of the collection, so we don't have to worry about the tapes per se while we have them, digitized. So the sale of the KPFK building has lots of repercussions that doesn't just affect KPFK, but it affects the archives, which has a pretty awesome revenue stream and will only get better in time. So compromising the radio station and the archives in one shot for something that will not give us enough money. I mean, it'll give us enough money to pay off our current debts, but it creates way more problems than it solves. You know, this building was built as a radio station with great circular design, so that it functions as a outstanding community space to produce great programming, music, and news programming, and house the offices that should be doing great work in a lot of areas that it's not doing right now, preparing the next generation of producers, training people how to produce news segments and community service programming, development. I mean, I can't tell you how many nonprofits that I'm associated with in some way. I'll give you one example. There's an after school program here in Los Angeles called A Place Called Home, and they offer education services as after school programs to inner city kids that are latchkey kids otherwise and would be unattended. And I got a tour recently, and they have a room of 15 employees that do nothing but seek out grants. And they have so many millions of dollars of grant money coming in. They never have to worry about anything. And in fact, not only do they not have to worry about finances, they just bought a corner 6,000 square foot building that they use as an auditorium for performances of their students in various theater and musical performances. And so they're growing. So the fact that KPFK used to and does not currently have a development department is a problem. And the fact that the national office does not have a development office or a staff to bring in money. I think that our paradigm of going to our listeners to save us financially is way past its prime. When I first started in 1990, I'll just give you another little bit of historical knowledge. The national office had a development department headed by a man called Dick Bunce. And I always wondered what this guy was. Tall, handsome, well-spoken. Who is this guy? What does he do? Within the first 2 years of my employment at Pacifica, he raised millions of dollars with large donors to finance a brand new building for KPFA. And he did that off air. Like, he needed millions, he got millions. And the fact that we do not have a national office with a development department that can bring in the millions we need for times like this is a giant problem. And I think that the knee-jerk reaction of, well, let's just sell something, you know, that's just way ill-advised maneuver at this time. You know, if I were going to look at our resources and see, you know, what are we going to do in a time of desperation? Selling the KPFK building or any other building is not the answer because of the problems that it causes from the sale, especially here in Los Angeles where property is so expensive. You lose a piece of property, you know, you're not getting that space back with parking like we have today. It's not going to happen. We'll never get the millions needed for that. A much smarter move would be to do a signal swap with our commercial end of the dial at WBAI. If we've got to take a drastic measure, let's take a drastic measure that brings in the revenue that will not only shore up our debts, our current debts, but will leave us financially stable for the next 100 years. The signal swap estimates I've been seeing is anywhere between 60 and 80 or $90 million in the middle of the number one media market in America, New York City. So to me, that would be much wiser maneuver. We'd get out of our debt and have, and after all of the renovations from every one of our buildings, we'd probably have 50, $60 million in a trust fund, making sure that we never get in a financial crisis like we've been the last 20 years or so. So the sale of the building, KPFK building, you know, puts KPFK at a giant disadvantage for a fantastic property with parking, that was actually paid off. Like, the national office is able to sell this building because we sold the PRA building in 1988 or 89. Like, we're losing two buildings now because of mismanagement and misspending. So, you know, I think we should stop the poor real estate decisions now and start making smart ones, which would be a signal swap. Like, if we're going to start over, let's rebrand our New York station with a new not-for-profit end of the dial signal and have tons of money to promote that new signal and perhaps start a few Pacifica stations in places that are absolutely necessary, like the Midwest or the South. Compromising the work that we do here at the archives is only part of the problem. And believe me, if we somehow have to, you know, move out of this space, $1.7 million is not going to get us a space for KPFK and the archives. We need a minimum of 6,000 square feet to house our tapes. It's very expensive. We also have leading archival digitizing equipment that we need set up and ready to go. We need our servers up and ready to go. You know, that requires space and it's going to, you know, come at a premium expense to afford the rents that are out there today when we're in a building that we should, that we owned outright just a few years ago. So, I think we need to start thinking big. Like, I appreciate the previous comments about we have to look at, you know, monthly, you know, balance sheets, but we really have to think of our long-term financial stability, the big numbers. You know, I recently brought in $35,000 worth of grant money in the past couple of months, off air. And, you know, last year I had to do five fundraisers for the archives to get through the month. I mean, get through the year, because last year was the first year we were not getting central services money from three of our key stations, KPFK, WBI, and, you know, WPFW has been off and on, and KPFT has been off and on, not steady. The only steady station has been KPFA. And, you know, for protecting the institutional history of our entire network, one station is not going to do it. It's just not going to work financially. We've had to make some serious adjustments. So, you know, if I can bring in $35,000 for the archives, you know, we need development teams at all of our station bringing in millions of dollars. You know, we need the CPB to get back on track, paying us several million dollars a year like we have been for the first 20 of my 30 years here. And, you know, how we got off that is another, like, where's the accountability at the national office when we lose CPB money? Like, who's responsible and how do they pay for that horrendous mistake that has, you know, helped put us in this position? What happened to the national board who voted for that, you know, Empire State Building deal that put us in this financial crisis in the first place? We need to have national officers that have a better criteria than spending $25 donated to a local station. They need to have serious expertise and decades of of experience in real estate and law and media and all the things that a legacy foundation like Pacifica need and most importantly deserve. So, you know, this is a really sad time since I've been here for 30 years. I don't know if anybody else has been here quite that long. I'm 61 years old. I've been here since 1990. That's 33 years. And, you know, I've seen some really good times. I've seen some bad times, but I've never seen anything like this. Like, you know, this is a whole new level of serious mismanagement at many different levels. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, where's the $4 million that I raised for Pacifica? Where did that go? You know, like, we do fundraisers for ourselves and we've raised, you know, a few million dollars for the archives, but, you know, we've also raised a lot of money for the network and deservedly so because all of the content comes from everybody, but it just, is just so disheartening that, the great resource that we are and the archives and the Pacifica collection is what distinguishes us from anybody, and that includes NPR. You know, I went to the 50-year anniversary of the signing of the Communications Act of 1967, which funded the CPB and then started NPR in the early 70s. You know, Pacifica was around for 20 years before that. Our civil rights collection is really the record of America. You know, our recordings of that time period is incredible. And they have to come to us for this. This is what makes us, you know, a national institution and really a treasure. So putting all of this at risk, you know, because of people who don't know how to make the best choice for our current situation. And to tell you the truth, the signal swap of WBAI is really the best financial decision, which does not uproot one of the most important stations in our network and the Pacifica Radio Archives. This is going to put us at a huge deficit if we have to retool somewhere else. And, you know, we have licenses going on all the time and stopping our digitization because of having to relocate somewhere else, you know, that really puts us at a disadvantage. So those are my thoughts. I'm happy to answer any questions anybody may have on this matter. I'm not sure that anything we say here is going to make a difference, but hopefully it will. And I'm here to help any way I can.
Well, thank you, Mark, and I'm glad you were candid about your opinions about this. I actually sat for a year on a committee that in New York was talking about the swap of WBAI back in 1991. It was an option that was put forth by the PNB at that time. And I guess one of the reasons why I've been so insistent for the past 30 years that we sit there and pay attention to what we're doing, which is we're broadcasters. We're not trying to create alternative America. We ultimately are broadcasters. And once we lose sight of that, once we lose sight of the fact that what we have to do is reach out to hundreds of thousands of people a week and have them be captivated by what we're doing, that will bring in the money. And I know that if we swap the signal in New York, I know what the numbers are right now. They're not as high as you think, but nevertheless, they would certainly bring in double digit money, that's for sure. Again, the problem is, okay, where are we at? What are we changing? Even if we go through $4.9 or $5 million in lickety split in with the situation of this problem in KPFK, then what? You know, if we keep on repeating the same things, we're back to square one 6 months later. So this is an opportunity for us to change everything, but I appreciate everything you said. Janine, you're next. Go on, Janine.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
We hear you.
Okay, great. Well, I commend Mark for talking about the signal swap. I've heard it several times, this option, because it makes more sense than Los Angeles, because Los Angeles has a wider signal area. So if we were to move into our potential of how wide our signal is, you know, that money could, you know, afford us, whereas New York is much more dense and smaller signal area. This is what I've heard. And I've heard this option brought up quite a few times. So, you know, yes, Jim, then, you know, what is still our problem? But that money would allow us to, you know, move into online, YouTube, you know, podcasting, all these things, publicizing, all these things that could be done with that. So I appreciate Mark bringing that into the conversation. I also, the reason I raised my hand, though, was before Mark spoke, and I just wanted to clarify something about the finances, because I'm not, when I bring up a balance sheet, I am not talking about a monthly balance sheet. I'm talking about a foundation balance sheet where we do know what the signals cost because they're an asset. You know, that we don't have anything like that is available to the listener members. You know, why can the directors rattle off all these statistics, you know, all these details, and we don't have it to look at? And so this issue with Nita, from what I understand, and this is something that I've been on the phone with Stephanie about, et cetera, Nita took at KPFK, stopped using our software and used their own software. And some of the holdup over the last year has been to move everything, not year, but maybe about 8 months, is to move everything back into our system. Now, this was something that the people with financial background at KPFK were asking about and kind of beating at the door, like, can we please keep our Great Plains up to date? So, yes, we need people with the expertise, with the history of accounting and financing in the conversation, because that's the way you manage properly. Thank you.
All right. And I have to differ with you, Janine. The value of the signals has been openly discussed and put out. I know I have. There's been no ambiguity about what their value is. The value of the signal in New York is not $90 million. It's probably close between 50 and 60 million. And the reason I get that calculation is that it's normal in calculations of valuing signals. You simply go to the metro market statistics of, Nielsen and multiply the non-commercial licenses that most of our signals are by $2 per person, and you get the value of the station. In the case of New York and Los Angeles, because it's a metro market of 17 million, it's far more valuable. 17 million times $3 is $54 million. The same thing with Los Angeles. Los Angeles is even higher in value because it has a higher concentration of advertising that is directed towards people driving in cars. 30% of the whole country's radio advertising is directed to the Los Angeles market. So but that's how much it costs to sell, not the swap. The swap would be a lesser price. The reason why I'm always opposed to swaps is that you will never be able to recover your signal, reach when you swap. In the case of New York, it would have been a 75% reduction of the signal. I don't care what Michael Hand, I believe, came in open session, talked about that. You know, I was there looking at the actual evidence by engineers presenting it. And the same thing with Los Angeles. If Los Angeles' signal is swapped, it would be a reduction of the most powerful signal west of the Mississippi. And no one wants that. The problem is we don't exploit the power of those signals, and that's been the rub for 25 to 30 years. Go on, Michael Ice. Michael?
Oh, yes, sorry. I didn't realize you were done. Thanks, Jim. Mark, thank you for explaining something that is, you know, invisible to a lot of us. And You know, I know a little bit about archiving and making old Scully 280s work, but what you've described has been a great insight into the archives. I just have a quick question. Is there a database that's available, and are things categorized in such a way that if Ken Burns was doing a documentary about whatever, or Rachel Maddow was doing a podcast about whatever, people along that line, is there a way that people who first would have to know the great material that PRA has and then use it for any sort of legitimate purpose so that we can help monetize it, is there a way that people in the production and creative community can access that? Or is that just one more thing that, you know, somebody with their hands tied behind their backs, you know, just can't get to?
Actually, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. The short answer is, yes, we have a database that anybody can search. We probably bring in around $30,000 to $50,000 a year in licensing for projects. The last largest one was Anderson Cooper's grandfather was on Pacifica Radio interviewing a Russian diplomat, and for his podcast, he wanted to play his grandfather's voice doing this interview, and that was a $5,000 license for us. That was within the last couple of months. So yes, there is a database that can be searched, but what I really would like is to start streaming our audio so people can listens to it. I need a web developer, but we're barely able to make payroll at this point in healthcare. But just, I wanted to also comment a little bit on comments about Neta or Netta. And that is, for whatever good or bad things you can say about them, the one thing that they did do, or at least were the stewards of, were getting our books in order. And when I made $35,000 worth of grant money from two different California granting institutions, it was because our grant grade changed from poor like 3 years ago or 4 years ago. Right before the pandemic, I got turned down for like five straight grants. Everybody from the Mellon Foundation to the Amundsen, like all these big granting agencies that should have given, you know, a slam dunk $100,000 grant to us for archiving community radio. But NEDA somehow in those years that they were working with us, our grade is currently, and this could end this year, is currently excellent. So, you know, when I got a $20,000 grant and a $10,000 grant, let's see, what did I get? I got $25,000 and $10,000. And it was because our grade was excellent. Our audits were up to date.
Right.
And so when they looked at this grade, it was excellent. And they were like, okay, you got it. And I was like, holy crap, I got to write more of these before our grade goes away. You know, if we don't get an audit done for this next year, like, do we have plans for our next audit? But I just wanted to mention that about NEDA, that whatever you can say good or bad about them, they got our finances to a point where I could get $35,000 worth of grants where I was shut out in my previous efforts.
I agree with you, Mark.
Just a quick follow-up.
Go on, Michael.
Yeah. I presume that excellent grade applies to the PRA, heaven forbid, not to the rest of Pacifica. And too bad you couldn't get a big grant out of Anderson Cooper. But thank you for the information.
Well, absolutely. Just to follow up on that, what's very important, Mark, in that is that it took a long time and a big fight to get up to the point where we are current with the AFRs and AFSs. And that's why, of course, you were able to get that money. And we can't retreat from that. We can't go backwards from that stance. Because if I'm going to sit there and work my behind off and help people try to get a CPB application, if we start falling back behind again, forget it. We're going to be in deep shit. All right, go on, Bertold.
Absolutely.
Go on, Bertold. You're up. Bertold?
Hi.
Go on.
I'm sorry, I was on the phone with Linda. Hi, everybody. Hi, Mark. I thought you were 21 years old, Mark.
Bertold, man, I feel kind of timeless, but time marches on and stops for no one. Great to hear from you, Bertold. Yeah. You're one of my favorites.
Okay. So I'm quickly addressing some of the things Mark's talked about. I'll skip the signal swap part. Mark is absolutely right, though. Who is accountable for, you know, the decisions to move the WBI, to write the contract, the WBI contract for the tower at, the Empire State Building? You know, everybody would love to just blame the WBI, but this was done by the national office and executive director without any input whatsoever from the WBI. I mean, I wasn't around at the time, but like they treat us locally, the local management like crap. And that's been over the past 13 years.
I think we lost Bertold.
We can't hear you, Bertold.
Because they would spill their gut and, the ambassador, one of the condition was like, if we negotiate with you and give you a good price, you cannot tell anybody because we have like hundreds of other not-for-profit at the tower that could not know that we gave you a good deal. So therefore this whole thing fell apart. And that's why we have this $3.2 million thing that went down because the executive director and then the board could not figure out how to, you know, discuss this quietly and then keep it private. So these are for the records. People keep on forgetting and, you know, just conveniently blaming BI. So thank you, Mark, for bringing that up. Who's held accountable for this? And how do you stop that from happening? But that was also 120 Wall Street. The National Office decided to move the WBI to 120 Wall Street. When I took over, we were paying like $20,000 a month. By the time I was into my third year, we were at $45,000-$50,000 a month. You know, there was a contract, an escalating contract. And so these are the things that we were doing that have destroyed us. CPB money. Who's responsible? I mean, I know it wasn't BI because we were filing everything that was needed. What station was responsible? And then what was the national office doing or not doing about it? That's $365,000 a year, which is way over WBI, central service and money to, the Pacific Radio Archives. From what I remember, that money went straight to the national office and then they used it to do whatever they had to do. We never even saw the money. So that was fine. So who's responsible for that? And why aren't we filing for CPB? Why didn't we file for CPB last year to find out what exactly we were rejected upon so that we can work on them? You know, nothing is happening. WBAI, we invested in programming 4 years ago so that we could increase listenership and so on so that we could qualify for CPB right now. So in other words, we invested 4 years ago and 4 years of investment that put us also in a hole, you know, is totally for nothing. And of course, we are blamed for it again. So I'm not doing this to, you know, have excuses for the guy. I'm just pointing out what Mark was saying. How come we don't have grants writers? You know, like, you know, I've been saying for a long time. I mean, WBI, we have no money, but each of the five stations can afford $2,500. To put aside, even if they have to do one extra day of fundraising to put aside and to give to the national office. That's over $12,500 a month that the national office could use to pay a professional marketing grant writing marketing company that would do this. I've been talking about that for 10 years. If we did that 3 years ago, you know, we would have something, you know, as Mark said, we don't have any grant writing. signal swap. I'll skip that. Again, for bad management, we also lost a building in New York, by the way. So these are, we are losing buildings left and right for a long time now. And Mark, I have two questions for you. I was saying this because I think there's a lot of people who do not have any idea of the history of all of these things going on at BEI and in the network. So Mark, I have two questions for you. Any idea what happened to the grants that, you know, was passed on to you from WBI, from Yoko Ono? You know, like when we reach out to her and she started giving grants, to the WBI and then you took over, were you able to continue that? And, what happened with the partnership things? Supposedly we're trying to figure out how to get between PRA and some university so that they could fund, saving these archives, because they're not just Pacifica archives or PRA archives. They're not even KPFK's archives. They are the history of America that are going to be lost. So what happened to that?
Okay. Yoko Ono, I think that started before my time. I do not have a contact for her or her people. I would love to have a contact. I do know John Wiener, who's based here in LA, and he's pals with her, but I would love to follow up on something like that. As far as the university, they're not doing it for free. You know, that is still going to be a $1 million to $2 million grant, which, you know, if as difficult a financial situation that we are in right now, I mean, this puts us in a really difficult spot to gather the money required to do this. But, you know, this is like a $20 million project, but this university will do it for a little over one at a great discount. But just the same, that requires, you know, $1 million grant, and they'll do it by 2025, which is what the Library of Congress is trying to use as a deadline for digitizing analog tapes. But, you know, the opportunity is there. The university's there. I have to come up with $1 million, you know, and I'm struggling to come up with payroll and healthcare with the, you know, Pacifica struggling as a foundation. You know, there's a lot of issues, but, you know, I've got a great relationship with them, and, you know, this relationship that I'm developing with large $1 billion funding sources here in California, these small grants I look at as, you know, setting the table for much larger asks. So, but again, people are aware of Pacifica's financial issues. And as long as we stay struggling, it's a gamble of whether or not they want to throw good money after bad. So, you know, it's that balance of trying to get Pacifica's, you know, core finances stable so that people can trust that, you know, their investment to the tune of $1 or $2 million will be going for the greater good. So those opportunities are still there, Bertolt. And I'm hoping that if we can somehow stabilize, you know, we can get this done, and there will be great things that happen if we do this, because, for example, you know, I became an official vendor for the Los Angeles Unified School District. If we can get the entire collection digitized, I can start marketing, our historical programs to the LA Unified School District to the tune of X number of dollars per 1,000 students. And there's over 300,000 students in LA Unified. So, you know, that would be an incredible revenue stream for Pacifica. There's lots of great things happening, and, you know, before any of these things happen, we have to somehow get stable as a foundation.
Okay, so I have two quick follow-up. I'm sorry, Jim, and then I'll be...
Go on, Bertolt. Go on.
Yeah. So, first of all, thank you, Mark. I'll try to get you, get the email exchange information about Yoko Ono so we see if we can do that together. Because she liked what we did on John Lennon at BAI, and then she checked out the archives at the Pacific Radio Archives, and she loved it, and she gave some money. So maybe we can try to do that ASAP, like yesterday.
Right.
So the notion of organization throwing good money at bad money, I reject that completely. The reason why Pacifica is in the hole that it's in is because we're getting almost 0% of our revenue from grants. If we are like any other normal not-for-profit and got 30% of our revenue from grants, we would look very extremely good financially. So if those people give us grants, you know, there would be no bad money. We would break even as a network. So I'm sick and tired of hearing this crap from these people. I mean, not you, Mark, but you know, like that. Please tell them that the argument is we're getting zero money from grants. And that's why, you know, and if we got 30% or 20% of money from grants, we would be smelling good. So I really reject that argument from these people when they keep saying that. So I really feel strongly about that. And second, I forgot what I was going to say, but you know, like this one really got me roused up.
Yeah. All right, man, you done?
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say.
All right. Let me bring on calling user number one. Go on, Jonathan.
Yeah, Jonathan Markowitz again. Thank you, Mark, for explaining this. Positing the idea of swapping the WBAI signal. Now, I understand that Jim, you just said that the signal reach would be reduced by 70%.
75%.
I'm sorry, that it would reach 70% of what it is now. Is that correct, Jim?
75% would be reduced to at least.
Is there a way to make up that the difference with repeater signals similar to how it's done in Southern California because of the line of sight problems in regards to the reach currently that the WBAI signal
interesting
reaches?
Question that would have to be looked at technically by people, not me.
Okay, I think Mark's rationale, if you remember, I brought this up with you going months back, Jim, on a lot of different meetings, that it makes much more sense to sell the New York license simply because of having, you know, tens of millions of dollars. I do think this, I do think that signal is worth a lot of money. I believe it's worth more than 60 million in spite of what the market claims. I think it has to be, very creatively sold. I mean, marketed in other words. So, but again, if that's the only solution financially for this problem that Beth is clearly correctly articulating in regards to the risk of defaulting on the FJC payment and the loan in general and all the other loans. But, you know, without money to sustain, without money to pay for Pacifica's operations in all five signal areas, at least for, I would say, 3 years, I mean, this would have to be, so in that sense, I believe that the WBAI signal is the only solution along with developing the other elements that have been expressed effectively by different people, including Mark and others, to establish maybe, a department at National Board. Now, having said that, I just want to point out to Mark that, and also to Berthold, that it wasn't just the decision on the Empire State Building transmitter antenna site after the WTC came down on 9/11. That decision, of course, was major financial. So we're talking about, I just want to say, for those who have criticized Pacifica's elected LSB governance structure as the reason Pacifica's financial situation has been in the toilet since 2003 or 2004,
is incorrect, because boneheaded lack of common sense decisions has been the hallmark of the national board all the way through the appointed board model. Okay? And not to mention the illegal governance change of February 99 when they eliminated the right of the then appointed advisory boards to elect two of their members to the national board, which was reversed, thank goodness. So, but getting back to the issue of decisions, I mean, WBAI's move of their studios and building a studio from scratch at Wall Street, at Lawrence Silverstein's building, this was a huge mistake done by Patricia Scott, then executive director, and the national board signed on to this. So this really put WBAI in a hole, not counting the Empire State Building contract. So again, so what underlies all of this has been a grossly inadequate real-time financial accounting from all of the divisions. Now, I don't know about, Pacifica Archives in terms of its accounting practices, but without a doubt, the five signal areas, but especially KPFA, who shunned Netta's involvement in their accounting. That was not mentioned here on this meeting yet. So KPFA is still operating like as a closed shop without any real accounting. So again, you have lack of common sense in terms of financial decisions, but really the biggest problem of all is a lack of transparency. This is what Janine Roan has been talking about, as well as Bella DeSoto in Los Angeles, about a lack of transparency of each of the general, of each of the signal areas in regards to the actual financial, in terms of money coming in, what the expenditures are, and all of the details, et cetera. I mean, this is, so again, that's the problem, is how accountable is Pacifica for whatever finances it's dealing with? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Johnson. As you know, I disagree with you on that. We lost approximately 75 to 80% of our listeners in the past 25 years. We've never addressed that. We've ignored that. We've swept it under the carpet again and again and again. And now we're faced with the consequences of this, with these kind of problems we're having to deal with in the past 10 years. Go on, Elizabeth.
I didn't say that we haven't lost our audiences during that period.
Well, I'm saying we've lost 80% of our audience since 1999, and that's a fact. Anyway. Elizabeth, come on. Eleanor.
Thank you. You mean this Elizabeth?
No, Eleanor Elizabeth Foreman. Go on, Eleanor.
Hi. Sorry. I wanted to just to John Markowitz. Valerie Van Isler was the one person at WBAI who wanted to go to 120 Wall Street. Nobody else wanted to, but what I got on the stack to say was, since the Pacifica Archives is such an invaluable resource on civil rights history, would it make sense to go to a bunch of civil rights organizations who use it and say this valuable resource is endangered if you all got together with the necessary funds to save the archives, save the building, and get the archives digitized quickly, then you would be paying in advance for X number of years of access to them. And they could save what's at risk to them.
Mark, what are your comments about plans, what Elizabeth just said?
Eleanor,
yes, thank you, Eleanor. Eleanor said, "In other ideas you've had to save the archives." Mark, are you there? I guess Mark has left. Mark Torres, are you still here? Mark has left. Okay, he's not here. 2792. 6-4, yeah. 2792, your comments? I think Mark
was left. It's not going to be addressed because he left?
Well,
I can't. Oh, that's Doc Shaw. Yeah, I don't know how to answer that, Eleanor. Mark is the director of the archives, and unfortunately he's not here right now.
I hope my idea is not going to be shelved. Will you follow up on it?
Yeah, send him an email.
Could you put his email in the chat?
I don't have it right now. He's marktorres@pacifica.org, I think. I'm not sure what his email is. Maybe somebody
get it to me afterwards.
All right, fine. Go on, Dr. Shaw.
Okay. I'm going to beat this horse one more time. When are we going to be forward thinking? We still keep talking about selling of this and who's responsible for that. And back in 19, I'm a rob. Nice. It's cute. I have to give you props, Jim. We have to go forward. We have to develop members. The way that people listen now, they do not listen all day, all night. No one has time for that. Members, like myself, don't listen that often. We're still members. When are we going to actually act? There are 24 board members on each station, and I'd like to understand how come each person is not willing to step outside of themselves and say, I will be responsible for bringing in $1,000 over 2 months, 3 months, whatever it may be, but on the regular. This is a serious question. How come we call ourselves activists, so many of us, and I'm not going to name names, yet you don't have any end with any large organizations who can't give a couple of hundred, a couple of $1,000? We have to make this effort, and we have to start moving forward, because no matter how much money you bring in, if you spend $1 more than you bring in, you're broke. And since our expenses are going to be ongoing and increasing, the way all things are in life, it will run out. And until we start moving forward to bring in money on a regular from people who give a damn about what's being said, who want to change the grid, and the grid doesn't have to be drastically changes. We could start making smaller changes. So somebody's show may not be on every single week, every single month. Let's start working on it. Don't just change the grid and we don't know what people out there want to listen to. Let's find out and we can go from there. Let's be responsible. We, board members, should say, I'm going to make sure something's coming in. I've made that pledge. I want to see someone else join me.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Shaw. 1+N20.
Doug here. I've been around at least as long as Mark. There's a real problem when Reagan deregulated the left end of the dial that we created a national, there's even a book on the subject, and they don't have the ability to control more than a few dimes at a time. If we sell a signal, swap a signal, sell a building, we have no transparency, we have very little. They don't have a dog. Nashville doesn't really have a dog in the fight like each of the five stations. Nashville is controlled by our affiliates, which also have no dog in the fight. We're just going to flush that money. It's that simple. WBAI was groomed for sale. That's why we moved to Silverstein's building, other than the issue of taxes and the fact that he had an exception on Manhattan Island. Yoko Ono was 12 years old when she watched Tokyo burn to the ground on March 11th, 10th of 1945. My wife and I put a program together, a 50-minute program together, and the station, KPFK, refuses to play it after all these years. A million to 2 million people died that year. I mean, that day, March 10th of 1945. But because we have a system where it's basically a jobs program for the left, and we have people in the station that have been there, I'm not talking programmers. I'm talking people who've made a living out of the station for 20 plus years. That's not the design of Pacifica. My point is Yoko Ono is a useful source, and this $1 million that Mark's asking for is a very good hook. The reason we should never have a structure that allows multi-million dollars to come in all at once, we will simply piss it away. And I've got a billion other things to say about the technology of the station. I've been the facilities director unpaid for years in the past. I've been on the board for decades in the past. And thank you for sharing.
Well, thank you, Doug. I didn't know you did a documentary about the bombing of Tokyo. I'd be interested to hear that sometime. Andrew.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. First of all, Jonathan said a few times, mentioned the sale of the BAI signal. I'm guessing he meant the swapping of it, which is what is only thing being considered for the record. And everyone should know that swapping a signal would require, as I understand, a vote of the membership, of affirmative vote by the membership, which would require an election, which we say we can't afford for even LSB members. That's a big endeavor and lengthy. Now, the issue on the issue of transparency, accountability, and including all of the listener members, the stakeholders in this discussion and knowing what's going on. Jim, as the chair, since this recording, this meeting has been recorded from the start, can we get a commitment that it will be, the recording would be will be posted at kpftx.org as it ought to be for all meetings? And on that issue, finally, meetings have not been posted. Most of the meetings have not been posted for the past at least year or two, I think, on kpftx.org as they ought to be. I see on the call list that KPFTX is listed. I'm wondering if we can get a commitment from whoever is there, if that is Otis, the person I understand is responsible for posting meetings, a commitment to correct the situation and start posting meetings so the listeners can listen to these meetings. That might be a good thing. And I would appreciate a response from both you, yourself, Jim, and KPFTX. Thank you.
Well, I'll certainly send it off to Otis. Otis would have to, Otis, are you there? Otis? I know he's streaming it, so maybe it's just live, but we'll, that's a good point, Andrew. I'll make sure that Otis gets it. And, Otis is not answering right now, so he's obviously not near the phone, but, I'll convey that to him. Go on, Kim.
Oh, I'm gonna pass for right now, Jim. Thanks. I'll take my hand down.
Okay. 2384.
That's
Beth. Beth. Go on, Beth.
Yep. yeah, so this is Beth Von Gunten. I'm a PNB director from KPFK. I serve on the PNB, the NFC, the National Strategic Planning Committee, the National Coordinating Committee, the National Personnel Committee. I chair the National Development Task Force, and as necessary, I give up my Saturdays for things like this, like everyone else here today has. This amounts to more than to donating more than a full-time job. There are only so many hours in the day and only so much more I can do. I welcome the participation of anyone else who cares to step forward. Thank you to both Mark and Jim for the reality check regarding the great value of NEDA to Pacifica. Audits cost money. Janine's entire perennial wish list of financial documents does too. To do an audit, we have to find a way to cover the cost. We're looking for that, trying to find a way to do that now to cover the cost of the upcoming audit. We have yet to find a way to answer that question. So I'm hopeful, but concerned. The current KPFK business manager has multiple business and accounting degrees, has been with Pacifica for more than 20 years, and is entirely professionally familiar with Great Plains. She is not the problem. The problem was in Pacifica's end of the technology. The business manager, as one person, is trying to pick up the slack from having lost an entire administrative agency. Again, I'll assert she is not the problem. Pacifica has greater need for financial services than we have money to pay for it. So again, it comes back to money. Regardless of what anyone may have been told regarding plans for the proceeds of any sale of the building, no plan has been proposed to the PNB. No plan has been approved. So anything is speculative. Not even the full amount from the sale would pay off our current pile of existing debts in full, even before factoring in covering the cost of moving KPFK, the archive, and the national office. I repeat that this sale has not been thought through. And for what it's worth, BAI is not the only signal in the commercial band. KPFA is also in the commercial band. One of the reasons it would make no sense at all to swap the KPFK signal is that there is no comparable signal to swap with. The FCC no longer issues signals the size of ours. Anything that would be available would be less than half the strength of the signal we have now. We would lose a lot of the signal area that we have, and therefore all the subscribers that we would no longer be able to service. So there's nothing comparable available in our market. So if we're talking about a signal swap, it would make more sense to look anywhere else. Thanks.
Yeah, the signal swap, I'll be blunt. I'm opposed to swapping any signal of any station. That's my red line, total red line. And we have to make sure that each station exploits its potential. That's the problem. They're not exploiting their potential to reach out to enough people to actually support themselves. That's where the dilemma we're caught in. We've been caught in this dilemma now for 25 to 30 years. And now, unfortunately, it's kicking us in the goddamn balls. Go on, Tom. Tom Voorhees.
Out of this meeting, who or how is it going to be taken to the PNB to take the for sale sign down off of KPFK? That's a question I'd like to hear people respond to. Somebody needs to do that. Is that going to be you, Jim, or Michael? Who's going to do that? I'm done.
To take the sale sign off. Okay, go on, Daryl. Let me go on, Daryl.
Daryl McPherson, WBAI, New York. What is the purpose of Pacifica? Right? My purpose of listening to Pacifica is to gain information that is unavailable anywhere. What I do whenever I talk to any being, even sometimes machine, is before I terminate the conversation, I mention, do you know about WBAI? Because that's my local Pacifica station. I understand that for business, quote unquote business reasons, that we need to be aware of the number of listeners and that we need to be appealing to listeners. However, more importantly, we need to convert listeners into being good citizens. And the way you do that is you give them information that will counter the information that they're currently consuming through the other media that they use. If we share with the listeners what the condition of Pacifica is right now, I just listened to Bob Law today, and he went back to drawing on his old end of the dial, 1600, when he was on that station for thousands of years, right? He did a fundraiser.
WRLS?
No.
I know the station you're talking about. Yeah.
AM.
Oh, you're talking about BLS. He was on BLS?
No, he was an AM.
Okay, go on, Bill. Go on.
Okay, so the deal is this. He was raising, he said everybody in this audience can give $5. And I'd like to know what the outcome of his fundraising was today. However, he has been in the business for 50 years and he has a loyal, Dad, thank you, Saul. He has a loyal audience and they were coming up with $25. They were coming up with $50. That's what you need to do. If what you say is factual, Jim, and I believe that it's factual, that in New York, the information source is WBAI and that the listenership is what, 70% African American, then what we need to do is A, take the archive information, go to every church, every educational institution, and get them to buy it. We need to ask the listeners to talk to everybody they know. Do you listen to WBAI? Do you have an educational institution that would be interested in a history of their, whatever it is that they do, whether it's labor or whether it's social work or whatever? There's something in that archive that they would benefit from, and then they could pass that along to their children, and then that's how you hook the younger generation, along with bringing them in, of course, by making people aware of what's happening and the systems that they're operating in. It would be nice to get loans from rich people. It would be nice to do all this other stuff. Passive income, in which we get massive listener commitment to A, spread the Pacifica message, which is get all the information from all the people around you so that you're better able to operate in this world, right? I want to know what's going on in Newsmax, right? If I listen to Newsmax, I'm less likely to understand what's going on than if I find someone who is capable and trained to listen and relay the information to me in a fashion that I understand, that will make my life easier when I talk to a Newsmax person. So, bottom line, tell the listeners, we need $20 million or else, I'm just picking that figure out of the air, or else you will lose the ability to get information that will make your life easier and may actually profit you in ways you're unaware of. So we complain about Christine Blasdale and the commercials, because we've heard them 10,000 times, but that lady who needs to talk to Julia Loggins and benefits and changes her life, she really got something out of it, and she becomes a loyal listener, and she not only donates to that program, but she starts listening to BAI, she learns about her civics, and blah, 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 blah. That's what I hear when I hear this station. So if I listen to Gary Null and I get 10,000 pieces of health information that is unavailable anywhere else, and from a person who's actually cured people from diseases that people are still playing with, then I don't care what his politics are. He can listen to Tucker Carlson all day long. If you talk about that Goldman Sachs worker who wanted to donate money to the station and was castigated for it, you're looking for CPB money. Where does the CPB money come from? It comes from the government that you are supposed to be responsible for. And what does that government do? Oh, gee whiz, it invades country. It starves country. It steals money because it runs the banking system. No problem there. We need that CPB money. So what I'm asking for, and forgive the emotional pitch because I'm just not well today. I am well today. That's what I'm trying to pitch. If you bring the listeners in, they will find a way to get the money, especially, here we go again, goodsearch.org. Zero out of pocket, one penny a search. We need 1 billion searches, right? 1 billion searches. We can stop all these meetings and then go back to doing real things like making sure everybody you know understands how this system works. And maybe we can move on to the 21st century, because what I'm seeing is we're operating with a 19th century mindset and we're destroying ourselves oh, gee whiz, the Chinese. Ain't what the Chinese are doing in out in the open, the United States has been doing for 20 years. And people run around talking about how they're free and how they need to protect their privacy and how they, I'm pontificating again, and how the currency isn't already digitalized, right? So what I'm expressing is if we reach out and share with the listeners the way that we can empower ourselves, we will increase our listenership, especially the children. And just one last thing. When you pick up a landline, what do you hear on the phone?
How did it tell me, man?
Come on, Jim. You pick up a landline. What do you hear?
Dial tone.
How are you gonna, and what do you do? Is anybody able to dial anymore? What do we do when we use the keypad on the phone? We type, right? Mm-hmm. We're all dead. There is no typing. There is a dial tone, but I don't know what to call it now. Because it's impossible for you to dial. So what we do then is we morph the definitions of the original words, and then we convince everybody that that's an actual definition, i.e., the woke, CRT. I actually saw CRT being presented as a Marxist theory. Help me out here. We are allowing people to be sucked into a system that will eat them alive with AI in a second. And the more I see Chat GPT connected to whatever search engine, the more I say, why aren't we on top of that? How do we use that?
All right.
I quit. I'm stopping.
All right, man. All right. No, okay. No, I understand. It's important to talk about this stuff. All right. Listen, so in terms of a report out on this, I guess the folks in Los Angeles are going to get a clearer idea of all the different options. Is that correct? Is Michael still on the phone or did he cut out? Michael, you're still – yeah, I see Michael Novick still here. You guys are going to put together some sort of list of all this stuff, get it more calibrated?
Yeah, we'll have another meeting shortly and, get the inventory together and talk further about, what would be involved. Like I say, I do think that the PNB should schedule a meeting for sometime soon to discuss that aspect of it. And, this conversation has gone way beyond that. I am glad that Mark was able to get on and bring home the point about the PRA, which is, equally, challenged by the concept of the sale of that building. And, take whatever other follow-up. If there are people interested in development, we had a development director. The last development director we had at KPFK focused entirely on on-air fund drives and, pitching for premiums. And, we need a development team that looks at off-air fundraising, whether it's, a donor stewardship and, finding major donors, writing grants that do not have strings attached, et cetera, et cetera. I think that, I know WBI is taking some funding from the city government, that none of that's available in LA, but we are looking into the county, and I've asked the ED to sign us up. We had a listing with LA County as a vendor, but it was tied up with a general manager we had 15 years ago, and it was impossible to correct it somehow. So the ED is going about getting us relisted to look into, some money from the county for grants and cultural work and PSAs and other stuff. But I think the critical thing is that we have to have, some plan in place, not just inventory of what we have, but what we need. Some people got on this call late and didn't hear the beginning where Stuart ran down, but essentially, what we have in place, I think Mo said this to us on a KPFK Tech Task Force, not so much here, but most of the stuff that we have in use would not survive a move. It would have, it's not just that it's outdated technology. It also would be physically probably difficult to remove and replace anywhere else. So, it's going to be a huge undertaking and all that should happen before putting it up for sale. You know, a couple of people talked about what's going to, you know, Tom asked taking it. The sign is not in the building, but the listing is still up. And people are continuing to look at it. So, and again, if anybody has ideas about someone who might, a nonprofit organization or a wealthy individual or group of individuals who would, you know, essentially buy the building from Pacifica and let Pacifica stay in it, I think that would solve some of the immediate financial problems people are talking about. So several people on this call did. Michael Heiss, I think, is interested, and Janine, and we'll definitely get them involved in that process of looking at, you know, what it will take to modernize one way or the other, and, you know, what it will cost. And, you know, there's a lot of other stuff that we haven't talked about and can't, but it would help if we had a presence on the National Finance Committee.
Right. That's a whole different ball game. Did you want to say something, Beth? Is that you?
I wanted to reiterate the request to post this audio ASAP immediately. Right. And then I would also request that maybe you, as the convener, could copy that link and send it out to the same list of people who were notified of the meeting and anybody else you want.
Well, I'll make sure Otis gets it by WeTransfer. Otis, can you unmute for a second, Otis? Otis? All right, I'll make sure.
Yes, it takes me a second. You know, when KPFTX started, we streamed all of the national meetings, and the local meetings had their meetings in person. When we went into COVID, all of a sudden every meeting of every committee, all 3,000 of them were being, you know, they were all online being recorded. 3/4 of the time I wouldn't even get the recording. It became a full-time job to handle the thousands of recordings that we're dealing with every day because everybody likes to have meetings at Pacifica. If people send me their meetings in a timely way, I'll post them. If they send me 300 meetings a year after the meetings have happened, they're not likely to be posted because I also work for Pacifica and have a lot of stuff to do. Like right now, I'm going through all of the affiliates and making sure that their schedules have been adjusted for daylight savings time. We've set out 3 blasts telling people to fix it, and most of them haven't. And I promise you, if I don't do it, we will get calls from them saying, what's wrong with the schedule? So this is the kind of thing that I have to deal with. So if people send me the meetings, I will post them. If they don't send the meetings, I can't. And the national meetings pretty much get posted at the right time.
All right. Thank you. Okay. On that note, I'm going to end the meeting. Thank you all for coming.
And I'll post this meeting as soon as Jim sends it.
Please don't end the meeting until we've had a chance.
Hold on, please. This is 4 hours. Pardon me?
I have to just add to that is, I think I'll take the bigger one.
Perfect. All right, that's somebody buying something. What did you have something to say, Eleanor?
Yes, give us all a chance to have a last look at the chat before you end the meeting, please.
I will save
it. Could I request that the chat be emailed around for those of us who don't have direct access, visual access to the chat?
Can I request that we not publish the chat for liability issues?
All right, fine. That's fine with me.
We don't need those kind of issues.
Teleconference meeting laws require that anything that that all participants be audible to all other participants at all times. The chat doesn't actually qualify. And if we don't share it, to make that accessible to some people but not to others, probably violates that law. And I object.
No, the chat is not part of the meeting.
Enough. I have other things I have to do today than to sit here and deal with this. So I want to thank everybody for participating. Buena notte. Okay?